Love me, love me, she do. Let me fly away with you, for my love is like the wind and wild as wind.
Thank God that's over. So much for the debut of the Laurel Players, and she was very disappointing. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. I'm Zach Brooks. For the 217th time, I'm joined by
Brendan Fitzpatrick.
And for the 15th time, we did the math. Plus one non-canonical episode. 15 plus time, we were joined by
me, Megan the Librarian.
15 Yay. Timers Club. We got to get you some sort of hat.
A movie ladder coffee mug. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah, you get a mug. And last week, we talked about, all three of us together, talked about The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
And this week, due to Leonardo DiCaprio.
Being a shithead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to spoil my title connection right now. My last review on Letterboxd of Revolutionary Road, which is tonight's movie that we're doing. Yes. I started it with the line Leonardo Despicable, which I think should be our title connection.
I think that works. It's fine. Are we doing Despicable Me next week then?
Oh, maybe. So tonight we're going to talk about Revolutionary Road from 2008. Yeah. Directed by Sam Mendes, based on a book, starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet back together again, along with Kathy Bates. Another boat wreck of a movie.
I think is more depressing than Titanic.
Only movie more depressing than Titanic, says Megan the Librarian.
Titanic, put it on the poster. Titanic is not depressing. It's sad.
It's sad.
But it's a beautiful story.
It has both. Yeah.
I feel like I've watched more depressing movies over the last month than this or Titanic.
Well, yeah.
One of which might be my best thing I watched this week.
Yeah, never mind. We'll we're not going to get into the movie yet. But yeah,
we are going to get into the movie eventually. And then at the end of the episode, we'll decide on our next movie based on suggestions sent in by you, the listeners, and us, your hosts. We'll be spoiling Revolutionary Road. It is on Max. Yes. HBO Max. If you've not seen it, you can watch it there. And if you do just want to jump ahead here, we're going to be watching next week, which will be the last episode before the Oscars. So indeed. Can Oscars month continue? Yep. We will see. Mm-hmm. But if you want to jump ahead, the timestamp is in the description of this podcast. If you're Jim Crumley, you just click on that timestamp and it takes you right there. Apparently his podcast app does that. Oh. I don't think any other ones do.
But. Fancy.
Yeah. But of course, you should pause the podcast, go watch the movie, come back, listen to our discussion.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And social media, at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, themovieladder@gmail.com, Movie Ladder on Letterboxd, all that stuff. Yep. Megan, welcome back.
Thank you.
Yes.
Happy to be here.
15 timers club for you, 10 timers club for Leo.
Yeah.
And 9 timers for Scorsese.
Well, but he didn't direct this movie.
No, that's why he's still stuck in that 9 timers club.
Indeed.
Okay. Sorry, I'm a little tired again. That's okay.
and I think 1 timers club for Sam Mendes, correct? Is this our first Sam Mendes on this podcast that we've done?
Never talked about Jarhead or
no.
No.
Definitely.
But I mean, I've done the Bond movies on a different podcast, but yes, we have. Oh wow. And now if you click on his filmography on Letterboxd, all 4 of the Beatles
I saw that the other day,
they're all in a line together. So it's like ridiculous. The 4 Beatles posters are all next to each other.
Except that it's kind of out of order from the way you always say John, Paul, George, Ringo. Instead, it's John, Paul, Ringo, George.
That's so true.
Yeah, we got to fix that.
So or George.
So there's John, Paul, George, Ringo. Come on.
Yeah. Ringo looks a lot like a guy I went to college with. And every time I see pictures of Ringo, or like when I watch the Peter Jackson one, I was like, oh, he looks just like Jack from college.
That's really funny.
Yeah. All right. Yes, well,
this is absolutely our first Sam Mendes movie. So that's exciting.
Nice. All right. And what's the best thing you guys watched this week? Megan, you can go first.
Well, I wasn't in the mood to watch movies this week, and this actually is the only movie I watched. But So I said last week that we should take 2 minutes to talk about the Survivor premiere today. So I will say that the best thing I watched this week was the Survivor premiere. Oh, and now we can talk about it.
Yes, welcome back, Survivor.
About it. I'm always excited when Survivor comes back. It's true, actually. You know, did you listen to Rob's interview with Jeff?
I did. And it was very good.
Yeah, and where Jeff said he thought people thought that he overdid it on the premiere of the first season back after COVID, where he was like, "Hi, I've missed you," and I was like, "No, Jeff, you didn't. I loved that because I also missed Survivor." And I don't know. There's something about a new season. I always feel hyped up and. It's just fun. And I thought it was a good episode. Seems like a good cast so far.
I literally finished Jelinski. It like 6 minutes ago. Like just finished. I got 6 minutes because we've been on here for 10 minutes. But yeah, I finished it like right before we got on this call.
It was good. It was good. I enjoyed it. I thought it was a really solid premiere. I mean, the new era is kind of its own thing now as opposed to the pre-41 stuff. But I thought it was a pretty enjoyable one. I like the two-hour format for a premiere to get to know as many people as possible. It's still really hard with 18 people to feel like you really know who these people are.
For sure. That's my problem at the beginning of seasons usually.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest issue is like every time someone opens their mouth, they need to put a Chyron under them in the premiere. And they didn't do that. So it's like,
There were a couple of times where I was listening to someone and I was like, is this? And then it took them a really long time to get to the confessional shot. So but did you have a favorite person?
I mean, Hunter is my preseason winner pick, so I'm always going to appreciate him. But I really, really love Tevin. I think my big thing with him is Mike Bloom did a really awesome interview with Tevin preseason that I fell in love with Tevin during that interview as much as Mike did. So I'm really I think Tevin is going to be a really fun character / real actual person for the entire season. As long as he's there, I hope, you know.
Well, it's weird for me to be in alignment with Brendan. But yeah, I like Tevin and Hunter and Bonnie as well.
Bonnie seems so nice.
I don't just like the male characters, but those are my favorites so far.
I'd say I really liked Randon in his preseason interview, but then I thought there was some blatant sexism on the show last night from Randon and Tim.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, really? I don't know. I was, this whole the women are going to vote all the men out. They always do that. No, they don't.
Yeah.
No, they don't. They hardly ever do. They really do not.
Get over it.
It's like a common misconception.
But it's so stupid. And it annoyed me. I was like, you know what? I'm going to root for other people. I thought Kenzie was good. She was in our office pool draft. I took her with the first pick. I think it was a good pick.
Nice.
I am annoyed by the two-hour premiere only because I was traveling all day back yesterday. I still had to watch Revolutionary Road, I told Brendan, I'm like, it is crazy that the first thing I'm doing after being traveling all day is sitting down and watching Revolutionary Road. and then Revolutionary Road ended pretty late, and then I tried to watch Survivor, and I made it 20 minutes before I fell asleep, and then didn't really have time today until just now to finally watch it.
Man.
It was good. Brendan, how about you? What's the best thing you watched?
I don't know that I really even want to go with the best thing I watched this week. I just want to go with
the most interesting thing you watched this week.
Most interesting thing I watched this week was Sofia Coppola's movie Priscilla, about the life of Priscilla Presley, who was the wife of Elvis Presley, if you didn't know. Played by I already forgot her name.
Kaylee Spaney.
Yeah. Elvis is played by Jacob Elordi. I really liked, and you and I talked about this in our side chat, Zach. I really liked the first three quarters of this film a lot because what Coppola chooses to do, and I said this in my letterbox review, so I'm really just echoing what I put there, but I really like the way that she sort of sets up the movie as to have this heavy horror movie kind of vibe to it in the beginning, because you're literally watching a 14-year-old to 17-year-old teenage girl get seduced into the world of Elvis Presley. And I really liked how they framed Jacob Elordi's Elvis to constantly be looming over this tiny actress in Kaylee Skeeny. And so there are lots of really great shots of both that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then her just like sitting alone in a house, like being surrounded by emptiness. And I really, really enjoyed, you know, my main issue with the film is that about three quarters of the way through the film, once she has sort of completely settled into her new life, the film does a bit of a time jump and then is more of a conventional biopic for like the back end of it. And so that knocked a couple of points off for me. But overall, I still think it's really worth the watch because it's such an interesting juxtaposition to Elvis, which came out, you know, starring
pretty interesting to have those two come out like a year
a little more than a year apart. It's a really interesting you know, the way that movie talks about the fame of Elvis and then the way this movie uses that fame to highlight the isolation of everyone that was in Elvis's orbit, especially Priscilla. I thought that it was a really well constructed film, and I think is like one that people probably missed last year. You know, like I don't think a lot of people watched it.
It took a long time to come to streaming too. It just came to streaming like this week, I think.
Yeah, so it's finally on Max. So people, I would definitely recommend people check it out. And then literally the best thing I watched this week was I wrapped up Courtroom Month on my own personal movie ladder with In the Name of the Father, and that was just like
a movie that's come up a bunch on this podcast.
Incredible,
great movie,
banger of a Daniel Day-Lewis performance, banger of a the Postal Wake performance. Really great way to wrap up my own little section of the movie ladder of the personal movie ladder that I was doing with courtroom dramas. So nice. Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
Megan, did you see Priscilla yet?
No, but I love In the Name of the Father.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That's good. That's great. I watched Priscilla in two sittings, and the first sitting was about the first hour, first half of that movie. And I was like, this is really good. Why didn't this get the love that it deserved? Mm-hmm. And then I was watched the second hour and I was like, oh, okay, I guess that might be why. First hour is great. Mm-hmm. So maybe just watch the first hour of Priscilla in terms of like a story about somebody who is in love with the most famous person in the world. And I think like it reminded me a lot of A Star is Born, some aspects of A Star is Born.
Yeah.
So best thing I watched this week. So I crossed it was a movie I'd seen, a Spielberg movie I'd seen before, but not since I was so young, I could not appreciate it. So this is one of those like first time rewatches essentially. And that is Schindler's List. I watched this for not the library layer. This is for the Honey I Shrunk the Watch List challenge that I do. Nice. I'd watched the longest movie that was on my watch list, and this is a bonus because I'd already seen it. And this movie was so impactful. I think it won Best Picture, so I don't think this is that bold of a thing to say, but and it's hard to compare this with Jaws and Jurassic Park and Raiders.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But like sure. This really might be Spielberg's masterpiece. Like the storytelling, the effective storytelling that Steven Spielberg has, and like the care and the craft, like there's so much in this that is so hard to watch, but it's not, especially compared to Zone of Interest that I watched recently, you know, that was up for Best Picture this year. It's just like it's really hard to watch. It's really effective, but it's so impactful and just feels like it's so careful the way that it does it. And you get some really, really fascinating characters, you know, including like the titular Schindler, but like the Ralph Fiennes character is a really good, like a really, really good villain, is like very minimizing to say, but he is like a despicable character in this. What is his name?
Ben Kingsley.
Ben Kingsley, thank you. It was on my tongue. Yeah. I just kept wanting to say the guy who played Gandhi, which I'm like more than the guy who played Gandhi. he was so like, he's just such a character you want to hug in this. Also, I always think of Ben Kingsley as being pretty tall.
And he's a tiny dude.
I don't think he is.
No, and I mean, Liam Neeson is also pretty big. But them Liam Neeson is tall. Them next to each other is like very, is kind of jarring, like when you see them. And just like, you just see the dehumanization in this, and you see it in Zone of Interest too. Like there's a lot, it's a very interesting pairing with Zone of Interest because it's like two totally different ways to tell a similar story. And black and white camera work looks so good. And like the use, like there's the one like little bit of color that comes through and like kind of what that symbolizes. And that's, I feel like the lasting legacy of this movie that people talk about.
Yeah.
And I, just like the there's so much good like cross-cutting, like it's just Spielberg really like, and also after watching The Fablemans, I appreciate this more too, like the way that Spielberg tells a story and just seeing it on such a serious subject and not on like a story about sharks or dinosaurs is like I just really really appreciate it. If you haven't seen Schindler's List since you were younger, it is hard to watch, it is long, but I definitely recommend it. It's really really good.
Yeah, I'd be really interested in revisiting it, especially after I just recently watched Judgment at Nuremberg for the first time.
That too, yeah.
Which is, you know, the film that came out in the 1950s that was all about the trials of Nazi doctors from World War II. A lot of similar themes and imagery as Schindler's List. I think it's also really interesting to contemplate the idea that, you know, Scorsese almost did Schindler's List.
Yes, instead I learned of Spielberg. That on podcast and, when I was listening to them.
And Spielberg had the script for the Cape Fear remake. And they basically, like, went out to dinner and they were like, what are you working on? What are you working on? And they're like, oh, we should swap scripts.
Well, and Spielberg just, was like, producing this because this is a story Spielberg wanted to do. But he didn't think he was, like, at that point of his career
ready for
that
he
could make this film. And that was why Scorsese was going to do it.
And I think it's a very different film with Scorsese.
I can't imagine a Scorsese version of this movie.
I think it's closer to Killers of the Flower Moon.
That's a good point. And I also thought, like, it's just a movie that I haven't noticed this in a lot of movies, but, like, there will be something, a plot element that is set up in Schindler's List and then paid off almost in, like, the very next scene. And it's almost like episodic in that way, where there's like something that happens and then it's paid off very quickly after. And I just thought like that made the movie moved so quickly for a 3-hour movie. Like it did not feel like it did. You did. I did not feel like at all. And I just think like for such a hard movie to watch, like Zone of Interest, I felt sitting in Zone of Interest. I did not feel in Schindler's List. So that is my. That is my plea to people. They should check that movie out. But it's not really streaming anywhere. I got it from the library. You can rent it, but it's not. Maybe it's on Crave or Disney. It might be on Disney Plus.
It probably is. Let me check.
But at least in the U.S., it's not streaming anywhere.
Speaking of a comfortable subject matter that's hard to talk about, should we talk about?
Well, that's why I said Revolutionary Road was depressing and difficult to watch. Schindler's List, Zone of Interest, 20 Days of Miracle, all much harder to watch than Revolutionary.
Just want to note, Schindler's List is not on Disney Plus.
We gotta get that.
We gotta fix that wall.
All right. Well, Brennan, you're the first. This is a first watch for you for Revolution. It is a rewatch for me. I checked my Letterboxd log. I watched it almost exactly a year ago. I watched it on February 11th of last year. So happy Valentine's Month, everybody. And Megan, you've watched this movie, I think, a few times.
Three, probably. I don't know. This reminds me of a correction to last week because I have seen Wolf of Wall Street 5 times. I just hadn't logged my most recent viewing when we discussed this last week.
There we go.
Let me see. What does it tell me about Revolutionary Road?
This was my third watch. So it was my last year when I watched it was a rewatch. This is my third time. But I had not seen it since it first came out in 2008.
I think that's the thing is that I think I would that's the weird thing is like, I know I always say like, it's really hard to like rewatch uncomfortable movies or movies that make you like feel a certain way, like give you like a really like deep, heavy vibe after you finish with them. But I think this is one I would revisit because firstly for the performances. I mean, Kate Winslet is just out of this world.
Despite my opening quote.
She is the opposite of everything that is said in the beginning of this film about her acting prowess. The other thing is like, I think this is one of the best examples of a film that builds up what people think about when you hear that stereotypical thing about what the American dream is, you know, the 2.5 kids and the picket fence and the suburbia and the perfect job and the mom stays home all day and does the dishes and vacuums and takes care of the kids and the dad goes to work every morning. It's basically taking that, Leave It to Beaver or, the Daddy one, those 1950s TV shows.
When we get them watching, watching Howdy Doody. The kids are watching Howdy Doody Time at one point in this movie.
Right. So it sort of flips the idea of that classic American family on its head and explores the deeper themes of, what are you giving up? And actually delves into the regrets of what if we didn't want to live the quote-unquote American dream and tried to do something else? And then everything in the world that bounces back against them when they have the notion to break out of the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
How it all comes crashing down. And I think that I love the way that this was set up, because in my brain, I sort of knew in the back of my head, there's no way these people are moving to Paris. There's no way this is going to work out.
No.
But I was really transfixed on how it was going to come crashing back down on them. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciated sort of the realistic way that this movie played with the little things and the big things that can complicate a decision to just change your life. I mean, I couldn't help watching this film think about Zach. You and I had two really good friends in Rachel and Elliot who did just decide to give up on the quote unquote American capitalistic dream and move to Europe.
Yeah, they also don't have children.
But let me finish my thought, please, before you interrupt me.
Well, isn't this a conversation though?
You asked me to give my thoughts as a first-time watcher, and that's what I'm doing. So, Jesus Christ.
All right,
so
keep going.
Okay, Zach, say what you want to say. Go ahead.
No, I don't have any. Just go ahead. Finish your thought.
So it's that sort of thing of, the people that have the freedom to make that choice and don't. And like you said, sometimes not to blame the children, but sometimes it comes down to something like the decision to raise a family. And then you get stuck in this rut of what your life is now, even though it's not the life you ever thought you were going to have or wanted. And then, do you settle? Do you continue to settle for that, or do you fight against it? And so I really thought that this film, especially the script and performances, does a really good job digging into those themes. And that's all I was trying to say.
That's it. All right.
Yeah.
Sorry,
Megan, monologue. How about you? Brendan Long. I'm a theater major. Leave me alone. Sometimes I have monologues.
You found my
performance lacking?
No, you just said a lot.
It wasn't exactly a triumph.
It's hard to respond to everything you said. Megan, what about you? What are your thoughts on this movie?
I think this movie is very interesting. I don't think that the author Richard Yates, who wrote the novel, intended it as a feminist thing.
Mm-hmm.
But from a modern point of view, it's kind of hard not to look at April as this woman who is just doesn't want to be a mother,
mm-hmm.
but is stuck with it and had kind of no other options. And I got really mad during one of the fight scenes they had, because Frank, the Leonardo DiCaprio character, is totally gaslighting her. And she's saying she doesn't want another baby. And he's saying that's abnormal. And then he tells her the definition of insanity is the inability to love. And it's
I wrote that down too.
He is just I was writing notes and I started writing in all caps because I was so mad that he was just this real, he doesn't see her as a human at all. He wants a wife who's going to hand him a drink when he gets home.
Right.
And he doesn't care about her internal life at all.
Right.
And he cannot see how miserable she is.
Right.
Because he's content.
And I had to look up, and every time I watch this video, I have to look up, when did Mad Men come out? Because it is so hard to not compare this movie to Mad Men.
Oh, no, it's totally...
And so Mad Men came out the summer, because a year before, like a year and a couple months before, it came out in July of 2007. So the first season of Mad Men had aired, although, you know, when this movie's in production, it's probably still airing. But it really, like, similar characters, a character who lives out in the suburbs, leaves his wife at home all day, goes to the office, cheats on his wife, comes home, wants his drink, like drinks while he's at the office, works in some sort of like sales, marketing type thing. So it is very much like the he's also a war veteran. I mean, there's like so yeah. like it, and I think like that hangs over this movie for me. And in general, my memory of this movie in between the times when I watch it, I always think I like it more. And every time when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, I really don't like this movie. And not just because it's uncomfortable, but I just don't think it's very good. I think like it deals very surface level with a whole bunch of ideas that could be handled better. And like Sam Mendes makes great movies. Like, he made amazing James Bond movies. He made 1917. Like, I do like American Beauty, although that's another one I haven't revisited in a long time. So I don't know. I mean, American Beauty might be the same. This feels like American Beauty in a different, like, transported to a different time period. And so I would
feels very adjacent to American Beauty, especially because I think what he's doing in this film is taking a melodrama that would have been made in the 1950s, but doing it through a modern lens of the 1950s.
Suburban life and the American dream is not like taking it, like he's taking it and just saying like the American dream is not all it's cracked up to be. Right. In that, like, this is the dark underbelly of the American dream.
Exactly.
And American Beauty basically could be told about like the kids of these parents, like like that, the ages that Kevin Spacey and Annette Bening are, I want to say Anne Bancroft, Annette Bening are in American Beauty, like could be the kids in the 1950s. Like they're about that age. In 1999. So it's like it's you don't think so?
It's close, yeah.
They're in their 40s. Yeah. In that?
I think my take on this is that it's like the ideas are really interesting. I think like I've read the book. I think the book is really good, and the book is considered like an American classic, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that the acting is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Sam Mendes was the right person to direct it.
I agree.
Yeah, I think the tone doesn't quite work. I think, like, I watched the deleted scenes for this, and there are a couple that I absolutely would not have cut.
Yeah.
That were, like, there's one scene where it's, like, Frank's birthday or something, and they're hanging out with Shep and Millie, the neighbors.
Yeah.
And Frank tells this story about his war service, and it's, like, this, you know, crazy, whatever, war story. And they're like, wow. And then April just looks at him and goes, you told that story last year. And it's like, she completely destroys him in that moment. And like, somehow that doesn't make the movie.
And
that's such a good scene, because that also shows like the monotony of like, when you're in a marriage and you've been married this long, like you're hearing this, you hear the same stories over and over.
Well, and part of the whole thing is like his self-image is he's like a loser, and he thinks he's, you know, hot shit or whatever, and he's absolutely not. But anyway,
I think that's really hard with Leo too, to like make him a loser. Like it's really tough, because like it's almost why people like got backlash with Leo being the lead in Killers of the Flower Moon too, is because it's really hard to believe that this guy is this big of an idiot, because he's so charismatic as an actor. Like, you don't want to hate on Leo, but he absolutely deserves to be hated in this movie.
Yeah,
but I think you can compare that with Wolf of Wall Street too, where he's playing like a charismatic loser, and I think like there's times
he's
charismatic with the Zoe Kazan character, right? Where like they takes her to bed immediately. Like, he's just like, he's able to woo her over.
Yeah, but that's about power, not about his charisma.
Yeah.
Well, I think, I mean, I would say the Don Draper comparison is apt, because, you know, that's another like very handsome guy who really doesn't have his shit together at all. And so I think it works. Like, it's like a good sort of deeper role for Leo. And I do think, like, I don't know, this movie, what we talked about it last week, was kind of like snubbed a bit in mm-hmm. award season for the acting anyway.
Yeah.
And both of these two, I think the two leads here would have, you know, like Kate Winslet wins her Oscar for The Reader the same year.
Right.
The Reader is not a good movie. I mean, like,
I've never seen The Reader. Yeah, I don't know.
You know, talked about Schindler's List, which is like one of the, you know, a great, great Holocaust movie starring Ralph Fiennes. And then there's The Reader, that's like a really shitty Holocaust movie starring Ralph Fiennes. And anyway.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the thing with the legacy of this movie is that, like, there are really good actors giving really good performances, but the material that they're acting has a bit of a, like,
Just doesn't quite work.
Like, Michael Shannon shows up in this movie for two scenes and absolutely, like, kills his scenes. But you're at the end of it, you're like, wait, but why is he here? Why is this necessary?
He represents the voice of
is there any other point to him being there than to voice the voice of the audience exploring these themes? Yeah. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, I was going to say he's like the voice of the cynic. Yeah.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
And I do appreciate that he got nominated for Best Supporting Actor as an actual supporting actor and not a lead in a movie that is getting nominated as a supporting actor. Like, he's coming in for a few scenes that is a supporting actor. Megan, you've seen Douglas Sirk movies and I've not.
And I feel like
is this supposed to be like a Douglas Sirk movie? Well, is it like a Douglas Sirk movie? Like, what are the comparisons?
I think this is what I think. I think that the material, yes, for sure.
Yeah.
But the presentation is not like a Sirk movie at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think, you know, one of the Sirk things is, you know, they're the Technicolor melodramas. They're bright color. And this is intentionally very beige, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the Sirk... Yeah, because they're melodramas, and this also is melodramatic, but like the way it's presented is not, it just doesn't quite work. And I do think, like, I think it would have been really interesting if Todd Haynes directed this. Like, I would like to see what he would have done with it.
I mean, doesn't that movie kind of exist and might come up next week?
Well, perhaps. Yeah, I mean, it does a little bit.
There's a movie on my list for next week that might come up. Todd Haynes.
Todd Haynes or like... apparently Todd Field almost directed this.
He wanted to change the script and they were like, no, you have to.
I got out the book today because I kind of thought the ending of the book, I thought
was a little different.
I had read something that suggested, you know, that April is committing suicide. And I was like, is it like clear cut in the book? Cause I wanted to double check that. And it is not. From what I just, you know, skimmed, I didn't actually sit down and read it, but it's a very, very close adaptation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, you know, writing styles have changed since the 60s, right?
Right.
And the way they wrote back then the dialogue in movies sounds a bit unnatural to our ears now.
Mm-hmm.
I think this movie has that quality that it just doesn't, there's something about the way the movie is presented that does not work with the tone of the material.
Yeah. And I noticed that with Leonardo DiCaprio's performance too, like especially early on, like he's just, the dialogue that he delivers is just stilted and it's like, it is very like stagey, which I guess kind of fits with the opening, right? Where we're getting like the stage performance. But it's just like
there's something
I didn't think he was good at all in this.
There's something very theatrical stage performance about this movie overall, I think.
Yeah.
Like it might have been better if they had adapted this for the stage instead of the screen.
It would make a good play for sure.
Yeah, it's a Eugene O'Neill play, basically.
Is the
implication that April kills herself? Like, I know April gives herself an abortion and dies as a result of it, but like
You hear her call an ambulance in the movie.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't think she intended to die. She seemed surprised
in the film. Yeah.
She was pretty desperate though.
Right. Well, and I think that takes on like a totally different read now with the restrictions on abortion and the restriction on women's health that is happening in this country and like is currently happening with IVF. And like,
yeah.
Like that this is, I mean, this is, April is a woman who is pushed not necessarily because of like government restrictions, but because of,
social.
Well, and I, you see husband's, this, like her husband pushing her as well.
And this happens on Mad Men too, right? When Betty unexpectedly gets pregnant, when she and Don are splitting up and she goes to her doctor and she kind of, I meant to look up what exactly happens in the scene, but she kind of hints that maybe she doesn't want the baby. And her doctor's like, well, you would never consider such a thing because, you know, and it's like, but in fact, I think in fact, a lot of women who get abortions already have children. And it's not like it's people who just don't want kids. It's people who like cannot handle another one, which is fair, I think. Like, I'm sure I don't have kids. I'm sure I think it must be exhausting and just very hard to be a parent. So
I definitely want to go back to the kids too. But I don't know, Brendan, if you had anything that you wanted to. Okay.
No, not at the moment.
So I always forget that they have kids already in this movie. And I just watched this a year ago because the kids are not in, like, the kids are basically the Inception kids where they're like playing in the backyard. And that's in like
their heads are literally turned away from the camera multiple times
and are like never there. Like, they're always doing things. And I'm like, where are the kids? Like, maybe they babysitters, like they were like out with this couple or they're like at somebody's house. Yeah. And like the kids are just like, and I know, I'm sure that's intentional. The kids are totally ignored. Like, these are two people just wrapped up in their own lives. Like, they're like, we're going to go to Paris. And it's like,
okay. Well, there is a scene where they tell the kids that they're moving to Paris.
Yes, and they tell the kids they're not moving to Paris. But, like, they're not, like, to uproot your kids at that age. Like, they're not quite school, but they're, like, very close to being.
It has, like, one line of dialogue in the entire film.
Yeah. And
that's the happy birthday.
So the happy birthday thing, when the kids showed up in the happy birthday scene, I was like, oh, is this... Am I like forgetting there was like a figment where he's imagining his kids? And then like, it took me a very long time to remember like, oh no, these are characters in the movie. Like, these are the kids. And I just think it's like, especially for what ends up happening at the end with the abortion, but like that they do have these kids and they're just completely ignored by both the movie and by their parents. And I thought that was an interesting aspect of this movie that stuck out to me.
Well, I mean, she pretty much says she never wanted kids.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or at least like not at that point in her life.
One was an accident and one one was a mistake. I don't think that's what she said.
The first one was like an accident and they had the second one to prove it wasn't actually an accident.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Which that's a good line.
Well, actually.
Poor kids. I mean, I'm sure those walls aren't that thick to be having that conversation in the house. Like, once again, the kids are just like props.
Well, and the Michael Shannon character has that line, I'm glad I'm not going to be that kid. And it's like,
right. Which is why I say that one of those kids could grow up to be one of the parents in American Beauty.
Yeah.
Just like screw up. I also think like Frank does terrible things. Like Leonardo DiCaprio's character is just we see him like nearly punch people multiple times, like nearly punch April and instead he punches the car and like doesn't break his hand, but hurts his hand. And I was thinking about the end of this movie. And socially, they're outcasts, right? We see Kathy Bates and her husband talking about them and how like, oh, it's nice that there's like finally a good family in the house because like, April and Frank were the good family. But I kind of think like Frank is the one who drove April to do this, like to have this abortion so that she could have her life back. Like, so she thought like he pushed her that she didn't feel like she had any other options. And at the end of the day, like Frank is like, oh, he's just like he's now with his kids and he's just kind of gets off like he's like things for him.
Yeah. But now he gets to be a single dad.
Yeah, he's stuck with the kid thing.
With two kids that he can barely look at as they swing on the swing set.
True.
Like, I think hopefully he spent his entire life crushed by guilt because he deserves it.
Yeah. And I do like we were talking about like monotony of marriage, some of that stuff earlier, like that deleted scene that you watched, Megan. And I think like that also, the monotony of marriage, that kind of is a nice tie to the end when what is Kathy Bates's character's name in this?
I don't remember.
Mrs. Gibbons. There we go. Mrs. Gibbons, because she gives you the American dream. Like her and Mr. Givings are sitting and she's talking about like, she's like gossiping about the new people that are there and how they're so lovely and like not finally nice people in the Revolutionary Roadhouse. And he just turns his hearing aid down.
I love that.
I think that's the last shot of the movie is him turning
the hearing
aid.
And it's like, almost like turning the volume down on the TV after the TV episode is over. Like you're like, you know.
Or just like you're showing the years of like monotony in suburban boring life shit, it's same shit different day, doesn't matter what, like how old, like you get older and this shit just keeps happening, it's just like it takes on different forms, so it's like that's pretty depressing. I don't know, but imagine that's not in the book.
That's how the book ends. I'm telling you, it's a very close adaptation.
I really like Richard Easton, who plays Mr. Givings. I really like him in that scene. It's really, really good.
I think Dylan Baker is made to play a guy from the 50s.
Oh, yeah.
Dylan Baker is great. He looks so 50s.
Yeah.
I always love that guy.
Yeah, he plays Frank's coworker. And I just always think of like Dr. Connors when I see him.
Yeah.
From the Spider-Man movies. But
he also had a recurring role on The Good Wife as a man who was accused of murdering his wife.
Oh, I could see that.
Yeah, he was pretty good. It was actually kind of a similar performance to this movie. Mm-hmm. In some ways, yeah.
Yeah, there's another movie he's in that I probably is on other people's list, but it reminded me of that performance. This movie was shot by Roger Deakins, who is known as one of the best cinematographers.
Greatest cinematographers of all time, yeah.
And in my review from the last time I watched this, I said I didn't see anything special about what Roger Deakins did. Did either of you pick up on anything you could be like, oh, because Roger Deakins has done amazing work. Like, do you feel like this is good work from Roger Deakins? Or like,
what? I mean, not anything flashy. I think he does a good job of just sort of not making it feel too flashy, because I think it needs to feel real and grounded. Mm-hmm. And I think the cinematography does a good job of making it feel like you're looking in on this American dream.
This American life.
And it's not like, it's not, you know, it's not trying to play it up too much with the cinematography, you know.
I think there was one shot I noticed, I think, and I did not write this down, I'm struggling to remember the details, but I think it's a shot of like Kate Winslet is in the foreground, and then it's like I think Michael Shannon and maybe Leo are like fighting behind her, and they're you know, they're sort of not in focus, but the way it's like Michael Shannon is kind of saying out loud everything she's thinking.
Yeah.
And I did think that was good, that like, you know, it's like her thoughts are literally being like acted out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The one thing I appreciated.
It's not a flashy movie though.
No, it's not. And I feel like when I think of Roger Deakins, I think of, you know, No Country for Old Men and Blade Runner 2049, and you know, like just like these, like Skyfall, you know, like Prisoners, like these movies that look amazing, you know, all these Coen Brothers movies that he works on. But what I did appreciate on this one is that when we do get like the big fight between April and Frank through the house, is like we go from like basically a camera, like a steady camera shot to like handheld following them through the house, and it does make it feel like you're almost like watching a documentary of these people. And it turns from like a almost like reality show confessional to like reality show, like to tie back to Survivor, like reality show, like chasing them through the jungle type thing. So like I did appreciate that, like that switch that we get, but yeah, otherwise it's like I feel like a little bit of a waste of his talents. All right, what else you guys have on your list?
I mean, those were the big things, just the thematics. We talked about Michael Shannon. I mean, Kathy Bates is always a solid supporting actress when she shows up in things. Really love it when she shows up in this. We really hit on David Harbour and Catherine Hahn as the best friends.
I do love Catherine Hahn is just like always the 50s suburban neighbor. Because I'm just like thinking of neighbor, WandaVision, you know, the year that Agatha is going to come out.
I really love the way David Harbour plays this, because like you see from the very like opening party of the movie that David Harbour's character has been in love with Kate Winslet for, however long they've known each other, for 10, 12, 15 years, whatever. And so you are slowly watching him watch their marriage fall apart. And then he basically gets completely heartbroken in the end. He's more heartbroken, it almost feels like,
that she's dead,
that she's dead, than Frank does, you know what I mean, like to a degree. Like he's even more shattered in some ways than Frank is. And I think David Harbour doesn't have a lot of dialogue to work with, so it's all like in his face and his movements. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so, he's really good at playing, like, you know, the frowny face of despair. And I think that that's really good. Like, I think he's really solid in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, I like him in this movie, too. I think that character is interesting because he, you know, he's supposedly in love with April, but he also doesn't really see her as a person. He sees, right, he's like, she's an idea.
Yeah.
And he's got her on a pedestal and all this. So,
yeah.
And you can see, like, after they have sex in the car, like, her frustration, like, oh, God, just take me home. Like, yeah, she's, stop it. Like, anyway, poor April. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think, like, what I like is what you're talking about him is, like, we see him often, like, standing and, like, sort of up on the hill looking at their house, yeah, often, like, just house. Staring.
Like,
and
they have the American dream that he always thought he'd have.
Well, and I think it's the house that he's staring, right? Like, they could have made it that he's staring at their car or staring at them, but it's that he's staring at the house. And so for all of these characters, this house, the Revolutionary Roadhouse, the titular Revolutionary Roadhouse, is like, represents this ideal that everybody thinks they want. And then when they get it, it's not as good as it's cracked up to
be. Once you're inside that house, you actually, like, have to go inside the interior lives of these people. And it's a good way of, like, symbolizing, like, you may pass a couple on the street and think they're, like, the perfect couple, but you don't know what's going on once they get home and their doors are closed and they're having, you know, they're having to live their everyday lives. Like, you never know what's really... You never know what's really going on with other people underneath the surface.
Right. Like, Brent and I look like we have the perfect podcast, and then you hear us yell at each other because one of us interrupts the other, and it's like, oh, okay, no, they're just normal, just like us.
There's a reason we don't live together anymore.
Right. That's what we could just be called Instagram if you made it now. It's like, oh, no, your Instagram life is not as great as it's cracked up.
Yeah, no, it's not. No, but I mean, but nobody's actual life is, like, as grand as their appearances are. Like, we all put on, and that's why I really like the idea of this, that this film opened with the play. Because we are all putting on this act to some degree in our lives. Nobody really knows what's going on, like, underneath the surface a lot of times. And once somebody asks or peels back your surface level to, like, find out what's really going on, then you become the David Harbour character and you find out that maybe you don't really, like, that it's more than you bargained for when you ask.
I think it's like, the grass is always greener on the other side. Exactly. Right? It does seem like Millie and Shep actually have a fairly decent relationship.
Right.
You know, at the end when he says, I don't want to talk about the Wheelers anymore. And she says, okay.
Yeah.
And they start, and she seems, it seems like she gets what he's saying. Yeah. And, like,
But there's also the scene when they first tell them that they're moving to Paris, and they're both like, oh, look, and you get more gaslighting because, like, why didn't you tell us? Like, why didn't, like, and it's like, well, we just made this decision, you know, like, you're not, we don't have to check with you. Yeah. Like, there is, like, gaslighting that goes on in that scene by the Campbells. But then when we get them in the bedroom and we see them, the Campbells together, and he's like, I just think it's ridiculous they're doing that. And Millie's like, oh, I'm so glad you said that. Me too. It's like, they're like,
I think that's a lie from Millie. For sure. Like, it's definitely a lie from Catherine Hahn's character, because I think what she's really feeling in that moment is, God, I wish I could do that.
Yes, exactly. You know? And, like, they both they both need to, like, validate to the other. Like, they need the other to validate to them that, like, oh, no, no, it's okay. Like, living this life is okay. Like, living the American dream is, like, that is actually okay. And it's like, is crazy to not want to live, like, the normal American dream.
And, like, it is okay for some people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, not everyone's going to be happy in that life, but some people will be. And that's great.
Yeah. Like, everybody's got their life path that they go on. Like, I firmly believe that, like, everybody's, like, life's paths are, like, there is not like a order of operations and a schedule to life's path. Yeah. I mean, you know, like, none of us are living the, like, parental dream, the parental American or Canadian dream, right? That, like, many of our peers are living, right? So, like, everybody's living, like, their own just their own path. So I think, like, and this movie is really getting at that. And I think, like, to go back to, like, stuff I don't like, I just think, like, this is doing it at, like, a a like film 101 level. Like, it's just not getting deep. It's just kind of not getting deep enough into the ideas for me. And that's like what I come to every time I watch this movie.
And that's why I used the term melodrama earlier. Why it really reminds me of like a classic 40s, 50s melodrama is that's what those movies do. Like, they present to you a surface level idea and dialogue about that surface level emotion. Mm-hmm. And then you feel that emotion in the moment if the movie's really well made. But then afterwards, you get sort of an empty feeling.
Yeah.
Because you're like, oh, I felt this in the moment, but there's really not much there, you know?
Nice title as to how I felt about Wolf of Wall Street last week. We haven't talked about Zoe Kazan.
Elia Kazan.
Niece of, I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Is it niece of Elia
Kazan?
Okay. And I thought, like, so she plays, like, very much a Mad Men character. She's got that Mad Men haircut. She's the secretary. Yep. She sleeps with the boss. Like, there's just so many ties to Mad Men. Which, Brennan, I don't think you have not watched Mad Men,
correct? I have never seen Mad Men.
Okay.
Mad Men is so good.
This made me want to rewatch Mad Men again.
I think I wrote that in my last review that said, I now have no choice but to do a full series rewatch of Mad Men.
I'm currently doing 6 Feet Under, so maybe after I finish 6 Feet Under in a couple months,
Speaking of American Beauty, right? Because
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
6 Feet Under is great too.
Yeah, really enjoying 6 Feet Under.
What I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. And being in this, like as a tie. Did I break up?
A little bit. But you're back now.
Sorry, you really appreciate it. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, my Yeah, I'm just looking at something. I want to make sure that. All right. Yeah, I really appreciated that, like, getting Zoe Kazan in this and her connection to Elia Kazan, because Elia Kazan, which I was like, oh, he did Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which
yes.
He did Streetcar Named Desire. We did right around the same time. I think we connect those two movies together?
We might have, There's a lot of that. Vibe in this,
exactly, like both of those movies, there's a lot of that vibe, like the marriage fight, but like and like that melodrama that you talked about, and so feels very intentional to cast Zoe Kazan in this. Mm-hmm.
She must be very young at this point, she looked young.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she was young, she was like youngish looking in The Big Short, or The Big Sick, sorry, not The Big Short, The Big Sick, and that was what was that, like 6-7 years later,
2016.
I liked her casting. I don't really know what the point. I mean, I guess it's just to show that Frank's a jerk and cheats on his wife and then treats both of them like crap.
Frank's it's the classic 50s thing.
Didn't the place that Frank works, that his dad worked there too? Like, he's basically just like following his father's footsteps. So again, you're getting that like generational stuff.
Another Frank moment that really pissed me off was when he's telling his coworkers that they're not going to Paris.
Oh, yeah.
And he plays it off like, it's like, oh, damn it, I really wanted to go. And it's like, no, you didn't.
You never wanted to go.
You're thrilled that you get to stay.
Yes.
Keep on having
and make
a
money
and fear.
Well, and it's like, it's just about how that, like, maybe he did want to go to Paris, but then when he gets the opportunity, like more money, more American dream dangled in front of him, it's like, oh no, I no longer want to go to Paris.
When Jay Sanders walks into the office, that J.O. Sanders as Bart Pollock, J.O. Sanders is one of my favorite, like, that guy actors.
Definitely
like,
that guy, yeah.
He pops up in so many things. The first time I ever saw him in something is he's one of Kevin Costner's legal assistants in JFK. There's a big dinner scene where it's like him and like three other that guy actor and actresses all sitting around a table with Kevin Costner, and you're like, oh yeah, that guy, that guy, that guy, that guy, that girl, that girl, that guy. And it's like, so like, I don't want to watch JFK just for that scene.
Yeah, JFK is great.
From this movie.
JFK is a classic.
J.O. Sanders, I love. Yeah.
I kept thinking he was the guy who's the friend in The Truman Show. But that's Noah Emmerich. Yeah. He just looks like him.
I'm glad you said that. I was trying to think of his name the other day.
I'm assuming he's related to Roland Emmerich.
I don't know. I've wondered about that. He was Stan from The Americans, right?
Yes. He was also Stan Beeman. Yes. He's so good in that show.
He's great. He's
Stan Beeman.
I've never seen The Americans, but does The Americans take place around this time period as well?
No, it's the 80s.
It's the 80s.
Okay. It does not look like she's related
they're
to...
They're communists. Spoiler alert, they're communists.
Oh, okay.
It's not really much of a spoiler.
That's the premise of the show. Yeah.
I have seen the first. I have seen the first episode. No, it does not look like he's related to Roland Emmerich.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Roland Emmerich also is German. So that wouldn't really.
Is he?
Yeah. Oh. I remembered he had some sort of accent. All right. Well, anything else? No, we talked about Roland Emmerich on the Revolutionary Road podcast.
Yeah, Roland Emmerich.
Well, I want to. Can we just go right to the movie map? Because I think it's obvious what it is. And I want to talk about how this movie, you know,
was this
like plays sequel. Against Titanic. Because I really think having seen Titanic makes this movie like even more horrifying.
Yes,
because
absolutely.
Like Jack, how could you? And
well, like think about like if this movie was set in the 30s, like you could say that this is their life after if they had both gotten off of the Titanic, like this is their life.
But it really is like I read something on Vulture about this actually that I thought it was more of a comedy piece, but it was quite good. And it talked about how the scene at the beginning where they have the fight in the car makes you think of the sex scene in Titanic. And it's like, oh my God, this movie is like pissing all over Titanic. And then at the end, when she asks him about his job, he draws the computer.
Yep.
Which is like, draw me like one of your computers, Jack.
And, draw me like, one of your space tech.
And then I think because Jack, you know, this whole like, let's move to Paris thing, like Jack lived that. That was Jack's life. And he was... Yeah. I think, you know, some people say, like, this is what would happen if Jack and Rose got together. I don't really think so. I don't think Jack was ever, like, interested at all in living a normal, like, a conventional life. He was...
He would want to be the one to go to Paris, although he might not want to cross the Atlantic again, but...
that's a bit traumatic, but yeah. And then, you know, in this movie, the Leo character is the one, like, Jack, you know, frees Rose from that conventional life. And here Frank is like forcing April into a box that she hates.
Yeah, it's more of a good juxtaposition than a sequel. It's like
it really is.
It's a mirror. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an evil mirror.
It's fantasy versus reality.
You're getting April having sex in the car. You're getting Kate Winslet having sex in the car. But not with Jack.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah. And it's and also one of the things that I think makes Jack in Titanic so appealing to a female audience is that he really does. He is interested in Rose as a person. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you want out of life, Rose?
And that's what makes him a manic pixie dream.
And he's the only person who sees her as something other than a bargaining chip, really. Mm. And it's just like, you know, this would be if this was Jack and Rose, this would be such a massive betrayal. That it's like it would be really devastating. So I just think, I think I'm sure this is intentional by the movie, I would think.
To cast them together.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Well, I mean, and obviously there's like the marketing aspect. Like, see them together again. And it's like, I mean, that, you know, that's great. Well, and then it's like, we've drawn you in and here's this really, really, just really sad story.
And this is like 11 years after.
I wonder if they intended to release it in 2007, because that would have been...
10 years,
Yeah. But anyway, I just think that... And also, like, Max Casella is in this as one of the... as one of Leo's co-workers. And I always kind of mix him up with Danny Nucci, who plays Fabrizio for some reason. Yeah. Every time I see Max Casella for a second, I'm like, oh, Fabrizio. And then I'm like, nope. It's Vinny from Duke House.
It's because he played a Fabrizio-type guy in Newsies.
Oh, maybe that's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I thought it was really interesting the way this movie kind of like played against Titanic. It's almost too bad they didn't get Billy Zane to play the Michael Shannon character.
Oh, yeah. Man, that would have been.
I mean, you already have Kathy Bates too, so that would have.
Maybe they tried to get Billy Zane and he said no. Mm-hmm. What were you thinking, Billy Zane?
They can get him for Zoolander 2, but they can't get him for Revolutionary Road.
I do appreciate you bringing that up as our movie map.
Good job.
and breaking our format.
Well,
Brendan,
you know, that's because okay, we don't want to get breaking. Stuck in this right. conventional podcast format train. Forever.
Yeah,
we're don't exactly like podcast rut.
Yeah, sometimes right. sometimes we have to think outside the American movie podcast dream box.
You thing. Don't want to end up yeah. hating each other and yeah, like, exactly. throwing
no.
chairs.
No.
Yeah.
He is like, did he break the chair? I was like, what are you
he
doing?
Did break
You're
the chair.
Did break
stuff.
The chair. Yeah.
And he's like, a bad a guy.
Yeah, he's just got rage issues, which, you know, and they like but they touch on the fact
that.
He's a
it's,
veteran, but they don't. I mean, that is a whole, you know, is this like PTSD that he's going through?
I don't think so. I think
no.
he's just a man baby.
He's okay. just a man child.
Who just wants to impress. He's got daddy issues.
Because he throws the chair after she tells him that she hates him, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's like, no, you don't. And it's like, well, actually, yeah, she does.
Yeah, they are like two suck. Kids playing house, essentially.
Yeah.
Brendan, do you have is your movie map also Titanic or do you have
I was going to say Titanic and I'm glad we did to have this entire conversation. So yeah,
okay.
there you go.
Well, just for the sake of changing things up, I agree. Titanic no. is a very good connection, but I think like also that Rachel getting married, Krisha, run that we had where we like, just like, you know, portraits of family, like in the handheld element of it for both of those movies.
I also thought of, Into the Wild and Wild
yeah.
because in Into the Wild it's like, man, society sucks at least,
yeah,
you know, as much as I find that guy very tiresome, like at least he actually did something about it.
right
there you go. And I also will throw out there's a movie map, and this will be a nice little this is going to be a nice segue to our box office mojo, is that this movie came out the same week as The Curious Case of Benjamin Button.
There you go.
So, and I realized that because I was looking through the Film Spotting archives to see when they covered this movie, and I realized I'd already listened to them talk about this because I listened to they did Benjamin Button / Revolutionary Road back in 2008, and I listened to it last year.
There you go.
Wow.
So that takes us to the box office. The limited release for this movie when it came out. So it was only in 3 theaters, just to get it in before the end of the year so it can be eligible for awards. Did come out the same week as Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which was number 3. Revolutionary Road, despite only being in 3 theaters, was at 29th on the box office. So, like, nothing terrible for only 3
that's
theaters.
That's the Leo and Kate factor, you know?
Exactly, yes. And I'm sure it was, like, New York, LA, Chicago, right? It was, like,
a
theater in each big city, or, like, maybe 3 theaters in one of the big cities. Other movies in the theater at that time that are of note, Marley and Me, which is another one about a family drama. That was number 1 in the theater that week. This week was Marley and Me, Bedtime Stories, Curious Case of Benjamin Button, Valkyrie, and Revolutionary Road, all making its debut. Yeah. Although this is Christmas of 2000.
I mean, this was a Christmas release movie. Can you imagine taking the family to see this for Christmas?
Just like Wolf of Wall Street.
Just like Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
But for a different reason. It might be.
Yeah, like, oh.
Yeah.
This is not a romance. Just don't think that.
Also in theaters, number 11, but since we're talking about Christmas, 4 Christmases is in theaters, which I do remember seeing that in theaters, which is why I bring that one up. And because we're talking about Sam Mendes and him making James Bond movies, Quantum of Solace is also in theaters. That's number 17. The Wrestler is number 23. I do remember seeing that one in theaters as well.
Sure.
And then jumping
that's
ahead
another
to
another great family Christmas movie.
Oh, yeah.
And then jumping ahead to the week that it goes wide. So it finally went wide January 23rd, so about a month later. It did open when it opened wide. It went at number 12. And the other movies that were opening that week, Underworld, Rise of the Lord, this is like some Underworld sequel, I guess. Yeah, really, really dumpy worry at
the
this
first
point.
One.
But speaking of Rachel Getting Married also was in the theaters at this point. This is in its 36th week of release, though, so it's pretty far down there, but interesting to see that. That also The Reader at number 20.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, I'm telling you, The Reader is not a good movie.
Well, we'll see if we're doing it next week.
Well, you shouldn't.
I was listening to a Blank Check and they were talking about Kate Winslet winning Oscars, and they were talking about The Reader and how she won The Reader instead of Revolutionary Road, and she should have won for this.
I also really liked her look in this movie, like the very blonde hair and
very different than what used to her looking like, I feel like.
Yeah. I thought she looked, I mean, you could see her as this sort of captivating beauty that would attract these men for sure.
All right. Well, as we get into listener feedback, Let's start with Olin. And he says, did have lots of laughs on the way, even if I knew they were the destination, even if I knew where the destination was. Some excellently timed intervention by Kathy Bates and Michael Shannon's characters was great, as was the one truly sane one there. Yes. The crazy guy is the sane one.
Yeah, and it's interesting how, like, at first, Frank is all like, yeah, this guy knows what's up. And then after they decide not to go, his attitude to the guy completely flips.
You're a bad man,
You're a crazy, like,
Yeah.
You didn't think so a week ago.
Right. Well, and that, like, there is also that, you know, Kathy Bates has her, like, skeleton in the closet that her son was in a mental hospital. Right. And he's just getting out, and she's trying to, like, make him normal by, like, bringing him to be with the two normal, you know, married couple with kids that live on Revolutionary Road. And like, that's her dark underbelly, right? That, like, each of these people has this, like, it's not that veneer that's painted. Very American Beauty in that sense. Olin continues. He says, good, fun journey, and liked Kate's characters knocking Leo back on so many occasions, particularly her complete indifference to his affair, though it did symbolize an emptiness inside of her. Good fun and performances. Kate will be my hero of the movie. 4 stars.
I do really like her reaction to his affair.
Yeah.
Like, you're a dick. What did you want me to say? Right. You want me to get all weepy and cryy and be like a bitch? Like, no. Like, you're a dick. You're going to do what you do. Like, I'm not surprised, basically. And I love her reaction in that scene.
Well, very glad that Olin had such a knee-slapping time watching
this movie. I'm like, I'm a little taken aback. 4 stars, good, clean, fun. Sure, buddy.
Well, maybe the tone, maybe he's getting the tone in a way that we're not.
Yeah, maybe there's maybe it's the way people, same way people reacted to May December, where some people were like, this is hilarious, and some people were like,
what he thought about May December, and I don't remember.
I'd like to know. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, who's next?
All right, Alex O writes in and says, Kate Winslet and Michael Shannon really stand out in this and almost push it into 4-star territory. But it is sort of an empty movie, and I think if not for the cast, it would not really be worth the watch. But hey, I bet Titanic fans were thrilled for the big reunion and then promptly upset after the first 5 minutes. 3.5 stars from LSO. Honestly, fair.
Megan, do you remember when you saw this in theaters? I'm assuming you must have gotten it.
Yeah, but I think I had already read the book, so I knew.
You knew what to expect.
Yeah, well, and like the trailer doesn't pitch it as a romance at all.
Well, if you watched the trailer on that I tweeted out this week, then you would have gotten that.
I missed it.
So it's interesting. The movie should do this more, right? It's the Joe versus the Volcano, Sleepless in Seattle, You've Got Mail. Like, bring the two stars of a hit back together and do something else with them. I guess we do get that. Like, Wes Anderson uses a lot of the same people. Like,
but I mean, in the 40s or whatever it was, you know, there are all these fabulous, like, famous screen pairings, and it doesn't happen as much.
Exactly. No, it's just the pairings versus, like, the big ensembles.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. All right, Robbie Smith says, this movie portrays the complexity of marriage. It makes you think about, what if you get into a marriage and realize it's not the right person, someone with different wants and needs, but you are already committed to them legally and in the movie with kids as well. And in this movie with kids as well. The ending is upsetting that April felt she wanted to do that on her own, ended up dying because she didn't feel like Frank was supportive of her. That's kind of what I was saying. It's really Frank's the one to blame there. I found this movie interesting, but it felt very slow and boring at points. There are some good moments, though, that did leave me liking more of the movie than I don't. 3 stars.
I was never bored. I will give the movie that. I was never bored. Even if I was a little turned off by it, I never found it, like, I wouldn't use the word boring.
Yeah, for me, it kept moving. Like, I felt like Like when this was over, I was like, oh, that felt like it was actually quicker. This movie's over 2 hours, and it felt pretty quick to me.
It's right at 2 hours.
Yeah, I think it's like 119 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought it was 220. Okay. Well, that might be why it felt short, because I'm like, oh, I thought this was 2 hours. It felt like 2 hours.
There you go. All right. Travis Payne writes in and said, I had previously only heard relatively bad things about this movie. Considering the cast and crew, I was pleasantly surprised and quite enjoyed it. I thought Winslet was phenomenal and will need to watch The Reader, considering she was nominated for that one.
Travis, don't watch The Reader.
I actually think this was a relatively weak Leo performance. I thought it was a little over the top.
Yep.
I knew Shannon was nominated for this performance and kept waiting for him to show up. While I was impressed, he was barely in the movie. 4 stars, though, from Travis. Yeah, we hit on the Shannon thing. I think that that's what makes it a supporting performance, is he's really strong in the 2 scenes he's in, you know, and I think that that really works.
Hey, he's in the movie more than he's in Groundhog Day.
Do you
think that?
could we create a Mandela effect that Kate Winslet won her Oscar for Revolutionary Road?
I honestly am always under that Mandela effect, like, whenever I think about it. So, yeah.
Let's just go with it, Travis. Travis? Yeah. She won for Revolutionary Road, okay?
Yeah. Well, and, you know, just to be the cynical Michael Shannon on this, it's like she only got nominated for that because that's what the studio decided to push versus this
right.
movie. There's probably some reason for that.
Yeah.
Or that maybe that was a different studio. But for whatever reason, that's all studio manufactured, not...
Right.
Whatever the reason, it was dumb.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Oh, I think the reason why it came up was because it was the Rachel getting married blank check, and they were talking about Anne Hathaway and her not getting nominated. Either she got nominated or didn't get. I don't remember what. Something about the nomination with Anne Hathaway. Gotcha.
Travis does watch The Reader, which I advise against, but if he does, I hope that he lets us know what he thinks of it.
Well, maybe we're all going to be watching it next week. Who knows?
I will not vote for that.
Okay. Well, speaking of you.
You will not be back next week if we watch The Reader.
Speaking of you and back next week, Ron says, hey, so at what point does fan favorite Megan the Librarian get promoted from guest to recurring role? After watching. Yes, go ahead.
Thanks, Ron.
No.
She's like, I'm busy.
I'm busy next week after watching The Reader. I'm going to go read something else. I'm going to be my own reader.
Yeah, she's our Michael Shannon. She comes on, she elevates, Shannon, and then...
Are you calling me a crazy person?
Yeah. Whoa. You're just
we're calling you deceptively tall.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn. No, that was Liam Neeson that's deceptively tall.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
We had Megan the Librarian month earlier year.
Nobody's ever named a month after me before.
No. Well, it crossed into 2 months and crossed into 2 years. So it's even more than just a month.
That's true.
Ron continues and says, after watching this, I don't know if I need a drink or to curl up in the fetal. Interesting choice of word there, Ron. Fetal position.
Oh, no.
Oh, but you know what, though? There is another deleted scene.
No. Of
Frank, it's not that. Don't worry. No, Frank, I think it's Frank coming home from the hospital after April dies, and he basically curls up in the fetal position and cries. Mm-hmm. And it's another one where I was like, why did they cut this? Like, I almost felt like they were trying to undermine Leo's performance on some level. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why?
They want you to hate him. Yeah.
But he, anyway.
I think this movie would be this can kind of get into my review when I get there, but like, I feel like this movie could be so much better if it kind of had both of them much more flawed and at fault.
Was a little more even.
Yeah.
A little more even-handed.
Which I feel like
they both do cheat on each other. I mean, they both do the thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, but again, that's a surface level thing. Mm-hmm. You're not telling us anything really about their characters. You're just saying like both of them are susceptible to having affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know.
Well, yeah, they're just very unhappy.
Yeah, that too. All right, finally, we wrap things up with the great Jim Crumley, who says, Revolutionary Road is a solid movie. It is a great portrait of a couple that aren't able to get out of their own way and be happy, either by settling into suburban life or by chasing their crazy dreams. It is also another solid piece of support for my claim that Leonardo DiCaprio has a pretty limited range as an actor.
Mm.
He is good at playing self-centered asses. He's good at playing self-centered asses, but not much else. 4 stars from Jim Crumley, though.
Do you think Jim was making a U2 reference when he said, get out of their own way, because there's a U2 song called Get Out of Your Own Way?
I don't know if that was on purpose.
Well, not to dox Jim, but he just went to the Sphere recently.
I was going to say, he told me he was going.
Yeah, he just went.
And did you know, I'm wearing my U2 Vegas hoodie. Well, sorry, listeners, you can't see how awesome my hoodie is, but
it's pretty nice.
Yeah, It's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, I hope you had a good time. Please let me know.
Yeah, this is yeah, that just about like sums up my thoughts. Like, yeah, that's good.
And Ron gave it 4 stars. I don't remember if I said Ron's star rating when read it.
And it was 2 4-stars in a row.
Yeah, because we got kind of deterred when we got into the fetal position talk.
Stop saying fetal position.
Megan the Librarian, you get to lead us off.
So yeah, it's funny because I'm sort of between 3.5 and 4. I get it's hilarious, this movie.
Hilarious.
Laugh riot is what I would call it. But I think by my own rating scale, I have to go with 4 stars because I have actually watched it 4 times. So yeah, I obviously would watch it again. I think it's really interesting. I think there's a lot going on with like gender roles in this movie. It really is like, you know, when she says you're the most beautiful thing there is, a man, you know, she's speaking, I think that's envy speaking, like, cause she, for her, like for him, like going to the office is like blah. And, you know, we all know that like having a job is kind of lame, but for her, it represents such an escape. Like the ability to get out of the house is just something she like dreams about. And then there's that scene too, where he keeps wanting to talk about feelings and she's like, could we just not? And you know that the stereotype is that women are the one who wants to talk about feelings. So I think it's a really interesting, like, and like I said before, I'm not sure that this was the original like authorial intent, but from a modern perspective, like if you read that. And I think they're both really good. And I think Michael Shannon and Kathy Bates are good. And I think David Harbour and Catherine Hahn, everybody is very good in this movie, honestly. So yeah, I will give it 4 stars, although I do think it's flawed. And there are some issues with it that it just doesn't quite work. But it's still like worth digging into. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I'm right there with you between being a 3.5 and a 4. In fact, I think I'm actually like lower on this movie after our conversation than I was coming into it. Like I'm leaning more towards a 3.5 over the 4 because of our conversation. Like I think that everything that you said and our feedback said is also totally valid. Like, I think that there's things that are very strong about this movie and things that, like, it's like an onion. It's like it has layers. Yes, and the more you peel it back, the onion
starts
to
cry.
And the onion starts to fall apart.
Like, yeah, it's like one of those onions that you cut into it and it's actually liquid on the inside, not...
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's chocolate.
chocolate, I wish.
It's like a chocolate onion. I think I'm gonna land where it's actually really on point that our listeners landed at a 3.75 overall. I think that's exactly where I am with this movie. And I'm gonna go to the lower end of that and give this a 3.5.
So you're like a 3.74 then.
Yeah,
just
exactly.
So you can round down.
I'm a 3.74. Go down to a 3.5.
Well, continuing this trend of things going down from 4 to 3.5, I came in at a 2.5, and I thought our conversation made me appreciate things more, talking through the book a little bit more, and like some of the connections to Cirque. I do think like this is like a solid but just like empty movie, much like last week. I felt like although Wolf of Wall Street's better than this, and I just think it's. It's 101. I would have rather seen the 201. And I feel like that 101 is like where I get to like, and I think that's like such a pet peeve I'm realizing of movies. Like I felt like Barbie was a 101 movie and I want the 2, like, and it's probably my own fault because I've seen so many movies now that like I get it when it's the 101.
I think that's where it bothers.
Definitely so, agree about Barbie. Yeah.
So I'm going to give this 3. I think like the performances are mostly good. I don't think Leo is good in this, unless that was like intentional. It's just like not over the top enough for me to feel like it was intentionally bad. It just like, I don't know. No, I'm a 3. Yeah. 3. So,
all right. This seems so I think we're at a 3.5 overall. Yeah.
Well, 3.75, 3.5 and 3. That's, you're getting right. A little bit above 3.5, but 3.5 for Letterboxd.
Yeah, so there you go. That
seems very accurate.
Yep.
Yeah, I think it's accurate. Yeah, I think it holds.
All right, here are the movie. Megan.
I think you have to say Kate Winslet.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I I don't want to name the entire cast again, but I think David Harbour and Catherine Hahn are really good.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this moment You know when you sort of realize that you always knew something, but you never thought about it before?
Like that several meant seven?
Oh, oh boy. But when...
several does not mean seven. I learned that last night. I thought every time somebody says several that they meant seven of something, but that is not the case.
Anyway...
But that's a joke for like three people.
I was like thinking about Revolutionary Road one day, yes. And I was like, wait, David Harbour plays the neighbor, doesn't he? Because it was after I had watched Stranger Things. And I never made the connection until that moment where it just clicked for me. Anyways, that's sort of beside the point. But yeah, I would go with Kate Winslet as the hero of the movie.
Yeah, it also took me a minute to realize it was David Harbour because he kind of looks like somebody else in the beginning.
You know, I think he is very tall, right?
Yeah, he is very tall. Yeah.
At least he certainly looks tall next to Winona Ryder, but maybe she's a teeny tiny person.
I'm also giving it to Kate Winslet. So there you go. What about you, Zach?
Yeah, I don't want to be boring and give it to Kate Winslet as well. So I will give it to Dylan Baker because it looks like he was just plucked out of that time period.
He seemed like he was having fun. Maybe he was the laugh riot.
Yes, that's definitely a laugh riot. He had the bow tie.
He was really good, actually.
Yeah,
he should have been on Mad Men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think he's a little. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. I feel like, I don't know if he has the right tone for Mad Men, but he could have been like the Burt Cooper type. But kind of silly, like Burt Cooper was. Lives on forever. And I was going to add something else. Oh, I just don't often like David Harbour, but I did like him in this.
He's good.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well, connections to last week, we talked about a lot of them. Leo being empty, being kind of a satire of
spousal abuse.
That's good. Yep.
That's not good.
No, but it's a good connection.
Yeah, no one knew what you meant. Yeah.
Think about this, okay? Leo, he makes this movie, then he does Shutter Island and Inception.
He looks really
good
in a suit.
That's a lot of spousal abuse.
He looks really good in a suit and fedora, too. I will say that. Yeah.
But those are three movies where he drives his wife insane.
Very true.
And all three movies with weirdness involving kids, like where and the wife too. But yeah, I think like the kids thing is something that's just like so interesting, especially having recently, but not that recently, watched this movie. It was like really something that stuck out to me. And he did have a kid in Wolf of Wall Street. Yep. Any other connections to last week?
He has a blonde wife and two kids. I mean,
and I think Wolf of Wall Street is also about like how the American dream is pretty lame.
Also true. I mean, he calls it the American dream being for suckers.
And in both, he's coming into the, like when it first starts in Wolf of Wall Street, he's like commuting into New York City, and he's starting lower level, and he's like he's getting promoted.
Some of the scenes really reminded me of the Matthew McConaughey scene.
They order lunchtime martinis every time.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. We have lunchtime martinis multiple times in this movie.
Very reminiscent, I thought.
All right, and title connection was, I know Brendan, you brought up another title connection, but are
no, I think we're going
wait
with
a minute.
Leo.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yes.
Go ahead. No, we talked about our, because okay, guys, listeners, listen to this, okay? Yes. We realized last week after we chose this movie that Wolf of Wall Street, Revolutionary Road. So, speaking of you two, my title connection is Leo, Where the Streets Have Names.
Yes. I do like that.
I like that.
Yes.
Where the Streets Have Leo Names.
This is going to be the start of, we can do some sort of Sunset Boulevard next week, maybe.
Hey, I wrote some of those down, so don't.
Oh, good. All right. I won't step all over them. Yeah, but I think we're going to stick with Leonardo Despicable.
He certainly was.
Yes.
Certainly was.
All right.
I was like, Leo, if I see you, I'm going to punch your face.
Well, good luck. If you see him and you punch him, that's what you should see.
I will be in jail next week, so I would never assault someone. Just be clear.
And if you did that and you got arrested, then you would let Ron down because then you would never be promoted.
That's true.
Yeah. Connections to other movies from this year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have Leo in a couple of movies we watched.
Yep.
Kathy Bates wasn't anything.
We do have a character named Frank. Let's circle back to The Departed. We got Frank.
Yep, Departed. Yeah. We got lots of Departed connections.
We also, we can't connect back to Catch Me If You Can, but Leonardo DiCaprio playing a character named Frank is
character's
naming Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah. Very true. I actually was thinking that we had watched something with David Harbour earlier this year, but we hadn't. I was just thinking of me seeing him in The Equalizer.
I could see him showing up in The Other Guys. I mean, he didn't, but we've also got another period piece, which we had in The Nice Guys, Chinatown, Babylon Blue Dress, and American Gangster all being period pieces.
Yeah.
And I guess Wolf of Wall Street also period piece and Big Short. So lots of period pieces this year.
New York is a running through. I mean, I guess, hard to avoid watching movies about New York.
But. Yeah, but this is like a specific type of New Yorker who commutes in. I think they live in Connecticut.
Yeah, this is a suburban New Yorker.
Yeah, and it takes the train in to New York every day. So. I feel like there's a movie, or maybe it's a show. It might be Mad Men, actually, where there's like two characters who sit across from each other on the train like every day commuting into the city, and they like strike up a it's like a Strangers on a Train type thing where they like just strike up like a conversation, but it happens over a number of times. And as I'm talking about it, I am pretty sure it's Mad Men, and I think it kind of relates to my one last thing. So I will move on. Any other connections to this year?
Nothing I wrote down, nothing off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Other times when this movie came up, so this came up off of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that was suggested. it makes sense so much it was suggested by Megan the Librarian.
There you go.
Another movie about a very unhappy married couple. Like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, this movie references a play / movie starring Bette Davis with Forrest in the title.
Yep.
Petrified Forrest.
Oh, yeah.
What's the name of that movie? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Revolutionary Road came up off of Romeo and Juliet. This was an episode that Megan was on, but it was not her suggestion. Megan, you did suggest In the Name of the Father off of that episode, though.
Pete Postlethwaite.
Yeah. Also Inception, all these movies that came up earlier. Brendan, you suggested Revolutionary Road. In the Name of the Father did make the finals, but we went with Summer of Sam off of that one.
Summer of Sam was very good.
Yeah.
Revolutionary Road came up off of Inception. Megan, you suggested this.
Because of the spousal abuse?
Wait, this is actually the point you made earlier. Leo did three movies in a row where his character torments his wife so much that she ends up doing something desperate. You already did Shutter Island. Why not finish the trilogy?
Well, there you go.
The trilogy. And it also came up off Megan the Librarian. You suggested it off of Titanic.
Of course.
I'm surprised it made it all the way to the host suggestions before somebody suggested that off of Titanic. And then Brendan, you suggested this last week off of Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
So come up a lot. Mm-hmm. All right. One last thing.
Okay. I have one that's going to blow your damn minds.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
You've expressed violence already once. So.
Wow. Put the chair down, Megan. Oh, God.
Okay, so I looked up the author of Revolutionary Road, Richard Yates, on Wikipedia.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
This is the truly mind-blowing fact I learned. Oh, no. Richard Yates's daughter, Monica, dated Larry David and was the inspiration for Elaine on Seinfeld.
Oh, wow.
Oh my God.
I was like, what? But Elaine's father is a novelist, right? And the episode with the jacket?
Yeah.
The suede jacket.
Yeah, I love the jacket.
That's actually happened to Larry David with Richard Yates.
Oh, wow. That's wild. Yeah. That's good. I
could not believe that when I was anyway.
That is a good factoid. I looked up Richard Yates to see if he had written any other books that became movies. And it was the only one that was.
Yeah. He was very beloved by other writers, but never commercially successful.
Gotcha.
Brendan, you got one last thing?
No, not really. Yeah.
Mine is that we compared Frank to Don Draper a lot, right? He's a veteran. Yes. He's that same character type. I mean, even if you just watch the first season of Mad Men, you will see what happened. You'll see similarities to Frank. But he actually reminded me a lot of Pete Campbell, who's another character in Mad Men, who has kind of a similar arc to Frank in this, where he is younger and comes in and he works his way up in the company and ends up having marital issues and kid, all this stuff.
Yeah.
But what I also was noticing was when I was looking at the character names is that the neighbors in this are the Campbells.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought it was a nice tie to Pete Campbell. And I'm pretty sure Pete Campbell is the one I was thinking of who strikes up the friendship with the guy on the train every day. I'm pretty sure I have some of that.
I don't remember that, but It's been a while since I watched Mad Men.
Yeah. So it's later on in the.
I do really love that show. It's one of my faves.
It is. It's one of those that like it's such a slow burn. But
yeah, it really is.
And I probably said this when I finished Mad Men because it might have been the best thing I watched that week. But like once you get to the end and you see the journey that all the characters have taken over this long period of time, it's really like makes you just want to start it back from the beginning.
Oh yeah, I did. I actually did. After the finale aired, I was like, I'm just gonna watch the whole series again, and I did. Mm-hmm. It's that good.
It needs to be like easier to stream because I think it's only on AMC Plus now.
I have a box set that came with two glasses, for drinking in your office. So TIFF introduced the Toronto International Film Festival introduced a TV program a few years back, and I actually managed to get a ticket to watch the season one finale, The Wheel, with live commentary from Matthew Weiner.
Oh, wow.
It was amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. I thought it would sell out like instantly, but I somehow managed to get in and it was like, I really, really love Mad Men. So it was very exciting.
Nice. Yeah, good. Mad Men, good show. This is something I didn't bring up earlier. That's going to be in place of Brendan's one last thing. But the fact, the scrambled egg scene at the end.
Yes.
Like, does it feel like there's significance to them eating eggs and this being about
very on the nose about whether you want your eggs scrambled or fried? Yeah.
I had not thought of that, but I suppose
the eggs are a metaphor.
Eggs representing life, and that then life gets ended. I guess that's a little bit charged way to describe what happens.
Do you want to cook the egg the way it lands in the pan, or do you want to scramble it all around?
Yeah. Okay. I just thought I thought it was interesting. And that's where we get like things seem like it's like Frank thinks that she is like quote unquote back to normal. Yeah. Like the, you know,
that's this a disturbing scene.
Yeah. This is all behind him. And then he goes to work and then she gives herself an abortion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and like
a fatal.
She's so obviously like not really.
Not okay.
Yeah. And he's just like, great. You're going to stop bugging me.
Yeah, you're back to being a Stepford wife, essentially.
Yeah, it really is.
It's on my list. Stop.
God. Don't blame me. Blame the 101 movie that just takes surface level symbolism. All right. Well,
I love the way he tells her, "Don't worry, darling."
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, we'll be watching "Don't Worry, Darling" next week. We will find out. I do want to try to remember. I'm going to say this now because, all right, so next week, we're going to pick our movie for next week. I do want to say this now so then people scroll back. Like, rewind about 5 minutes to Megan the Librarian's one last thing, because even if you don't watch Revolutionary Road, I think her fact that she dug up will blow your mind.
It was crazy.
So if you skipped ahead, go back 5 minutes and listen to her talk about that. And then you'll hear us talk about that.
Or just listen to the whole podcast.
Or do that. all right. Listener suggestions, once you do pick our movie for next week, send us your feedback at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, movieladder@gmail.com. We'll be back to normal-ish programming either Tuesday or Wednesday, not all the way to Thursday next week.
No, definitely not.
But I don't know if it'll be Tuesday or Wednesday. Do you have something going on? You made a sound.
No.
Okay.
I thought you were about to say you were going to California or something.
I was just thinking about it as a short turnaround if we did it Tuesday, but we can talk about that off pod.
Tuesday is a little better for me.
Whatever.
Okay.
I mean, Wednesday's a survivor again. So,
true. Also, Wednesday is my terrible basketball team is playing on Wednesday as well. All right.
Oh, not your football team?
No. My terrible basketball team that I watch, not that I like play.
Oh, gotcha.
But yeah, so probably Tuesday. All right. Olin kicks us off and said, felt so strongly, so only going with this one. I hope this is another funny one, according to Olin. and that is Heavenly Creatures. Kate Winslet running through the woods with anger about how family and circumstance dictate where she must live in her film debut.
Olin loves Melanie Lynskey.
He does. I do know that. At the Oscars led to the first appearance of Fran Walsh and Peter Jackson with their nominations for Best Original Screenplay. Yes, that is the other thing we want to think about. We've done... Three Oscar nominees in a row. Yes, three movies that are nominated for Oscars in a row. We did talk about wanting to do Oscar Month leading up to the Oscars. So next week would be the last week of Oscar Month.
But we would have to do one more week because 4 weeks is not a month.
True. Yes, I did. I did learn that 4 weeks is not.
Did learn that recently.
Yes, Alex Chester.
Also learned several is not seven. Four weeks is not a month. So.
Alex and Av both. I think it's Av more than Chester. Yeah, very mad that people say four
Chester
weeks
definitely got really really.
It was Chester. Yeah.
Yeah, it was Chester got really really.
And then they were talking. Yeah, there's all that's.
People pretty, love pretty it good. When you we reference other podcasts on our podcast.
I think there's a big Venn diagram between listeners of this podcast. Listeners are pretty good.
All right.
Alex O says another film with a couple and encountering troubles in their relationship, but this one a twist. The one I love. Oh, I did
this one. I don't know. I don't know this movie.
Mark Duplass and speaking of Mad Men, Peggy Olson, Elizabeth.
I don't know that one.
Whatever her name is.
Moss.
Elizabeth Moss. Kept trying to say Olson, which is wrong.
Peggy Olson is her name on the show.
Peggy Olson, yes, that's why. Kate Winslet finds a different way to leave a rocky relationship. Yeah, this one was on my list too. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yep, that had to come up. Yep.
Revolutionary Road. On my list as well.
Yes. Revolutionary Road takes place mostly in 1955. So how about the best picture winner of that year and one of my favorites, Marty?
Marty.
I've never seen Marty.
No. I never realized that Marty came out in 1955, and that's the year that Marty goes back to the Back to the Past. So it's gotta be intentional. I do like that.
We can double back to Marty.
Marty. Robbie has Marriage Story. That was on my list.
It's on my list as well. Yep. Yeah.
I feel like that scene, especially where Frank punches the car, I was just that's like when Adam Driver punches the wall. And American Beauty, Sam Mendes directed. Could be a sequel to this movie, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that was my words, not his. Travis says, my suggestion for next week is another Mendes Deakins movie, Empire of Light.
Never saw Empire of Light. But,
me either.
It is not
had Empire Oscar buzz.
Oh, did it have Oscar nominations? Ron has Heavenly Creatures, same one Olin suggested. Kate Winslet and a tragic relationship.
Yep.
Road to Perdition. All road titles lead to Sam Mendes. Yep.
Multiple Oscar nominations for Road to Perdition as well.
Yep. Yeah. That's one I always forget is a Sam Mendes movie.
Yeah, for sure.
Road to Perdition. Yep. And finally, The Holiday. Relationships with Kate Winslet and Catherine Hahn. A little late.
Oh, I didn't remember she was in that. Interesting.
Yeah.
Jim has how about another road movie from a year later that involves a man and his wife, the evolution of their marriage and their family under stressful situations, and the drastic measures that they consider. John Hillcoat's The Road from 2009.
Oh my goodness.
It's not as lighthearted as Revolutionary
Road.
Jeez.
This is not the Cormac McCarthy The Road. It's a different The Road.
This is
the Cormac McCarthy. Oh, it is the Cormac McCarthy. Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Jim also says the movie shares two crew members.
Talk about bleak.
Also based on a book.
Very true.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. Road to Perdition is based on a graphic novel, I think.
I believe that is correct, yes.
And then my brother Aaron has Glory Road, I think just for the road of it all. Also, good one right before March Madness, watch a basketball movie.
Oh, yeah, that's
right. And Misery. For Kathy Bates, also could be described some people watching Revolutionary Road are in misery.
And I think doesn't it start on a road?
Yeah.
It's a car accident, right?
You have to get down there somehow. And it's about somebody who writes a book, too.
And it's about someone not liking how the story of another character's life is being written.
That's interesting.
All those connections.
Yeah, there you go.
All right.
MPL, you get to go first again because you're the guest.
Woohoo.
Until you get promoted, then you have to start waiting your turn.
Oh, no. Okay, my first suggestion is Little Children.
Yep.
Which is Kate Winslet, Todd Field, Marital Strife, and also randomly Ty Simpkins played Kate and Leo's son in Revolutionary Road, and he plays Patrick Wilson and Jennifer Connelly's son in Little Children.
Wait, that was Ty Simpkins?
It was Ty Simpkins. Yep.
Wow, did not realize that. Also, connection to Nice Guys.
Yep.
He was the kid at the beginning of Nice Guys.
Oh, yeah, okay. We talked about this, and you remember...
I knew that name sounded familiar, and I couldn't remember why. That would have been a connection.
Yeah.
Yep. He's also the kid in Iron Man 3.
He's Iron Man 3 kid, yeah.
And he's in The Whale. He shows up at the door in The Whale.
All right. Well, anyways. Little Children. Okay, my second... pick is an actual 1950s melodrama about living an unconventional life, and that is All That Heaven Allows, the classic Douglas Sirk.
Unfortunately, it's not streaming anywhere.
It's not?
I can't find it fucking anywhere. Yeah, I've been trying to find it for months.
Really?
Yep.
Well, it's too bad you all missed the Criterion flash sale. You could have just ordered it.
I know. Rock Hudson, right?
Yes, Rock Hudson and Jane Wyman.
Yeah, no, it's not. Yeah, it's not streaming anywhere. Like, can't even rent it.
Nope.
What?
Nope.
What?
It's why I had to change my circuit pick on the library ladder challenge for a couple weeks from now.
That's because
it's not anywhere. Yeah, there's only like two. That. There's only two available circs streaming right now.
What? Yeah. You need to get Turner Classic Movies, and then it'll be on there. Yeah. Okay, well, so much for that. What a bust. Anyway, and then I have, I did put Carol on my list for the Todd Haynes.
There you go.
50s unhappy wife. And I would say, you know, the Rooney Mara character is trying to avoid being sucked into the American dream. Then, Gone Girl.
I had that on my list as well.
So good.
Yeah.
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 The opening of I think the opening of this movie of Revolutionary Road is like it reminds when they meet at the party. I was thinking so much about
Gone Girl. Sure.
Yeah, like in like how like he seems so cool and she falls for him and then they get into like it's very and then they get into a relationship but it's not as good as it seems. That's a movie I think that makes it much more balanced between the two of them being toxic versus
Revolutionary Road. Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, took that
love
off my
Gone
list.
Girl. Just love that movie. And then I guess my fifth one, I will go with The Ice Storm, which is the Ang Lee, which is about set in the 70s. Also about sort of suburban people with ennui.
Key part.
And I think I'm trying to think now which of these were Oscar nominated because I think Kate Winslet was nominated for Little Children, and Rosamund Pike. Was nominated for Gone Girl. Carol had a bunch of nominations. Yeah. And I don't know about All That Heaven Allows. I'm actually not sure.
No idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one
I'd have to look it up. But well, anyway, well, apparently it's not streaming.
We can
streaming,
look at it maybe when we get to the... Yeah, when we look at streaming, we can look at Oscar-ish.
And is it on YouTube?
Probably.
I'm going to check.
That's a good place to check.
Yeah, I'm going to check right now.
All right. Well, I will go with another film that I was sort of reminded of that I haven't seen, but based on the, you know, melodrama of it all, another Todd Haynes film, I will with Far From Heaven.
Yep, that was on my list.
Which I haven't seen. I've wanted to see ever since I watched May December and ever since I watched Imitation of Life. It's been on my list forever. Let's see. I will also go with Mary's Story was taken off my list. I will go with another story about a couple who have a seemingly who move into having a seemingly perfect life and
Brady Bunch
find out life is not quite as perfect as they imagined. They also have two children. I'm gonna go with the Jude Law Carrie Coon movie, The Nest.
On my watch list.
Yep.
Thanks.
I will also go with let's see. Yeah, I will put Sunset Boulevard on the board for roads, roads, boulevards, streets, whatever. I will go with another movie about a couple who say really awful things to each other. I just watched this film for the first time a couple weeks ago, starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who we just talked about. You Hurt My Feelings.
Yeah, interesting look at a relationship for sure.
Absolutely.
And authors too in that. Yep. I mean, this is not about an author, but yeah, there's an author.
Yeah, for sure. I will also go with
Sunset Boulevard with, also has like a relationship where things aren't all they seem on from the outside, right?
For sure. Yep. Another movie that just came to streaming that is all about relationships, All of Us Strangers.
Okay.
Which I have not seen yet. But I think there would be some good connections with it.
I have also not seen that. It just recently came to streaming, as you said.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That'll be my 5. So there you go. Boom.
So I have 8 on my list. I got to cut some. All right. First one. There was talk about Pleasant Brook. I think that was the city they live in was Pleasant Brook.
I wrote down Pleasantville was an also ran.
Yeah, so Pleasantville I will take. Also like, you know, 50s suburban life, all not what it seems.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, something some stuff in the bathroom happening. So
do you think we're subliminally connecting to Tobey Maguire movies because of Dylan Baker?
No. I wasn't.
I thought it was because of the Leo crew.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that too.
So we could do all the Leo people, and then we do Molly's game.
We do all the Leo.
But you know, we got the Ice Storm and Pleasantville. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I did not think about that. Also, like they are watching. I think we brought it up, but they're watching Howdy Doody Time.
Yes.
Right.
And so you know, like the watching TV back in the '50s. And so speaking of that, Howdy Doody Time, that it's Howdy Doody Time, always makes me think of the opening of another movie that has at least some scenes taking place in 1955. This is not Marty. This is a story about Marty, and that is Back to the Future Part 3.
What?
Okay.
It opens.
Part 3, it's a Western.
So?
Okay.
It starts in 1955, and Marty is woken up by Doc's TV playing Howdy Doody Time. And I always think of that when I hear that Howdy Doody Time intro.
It always reminds me of the scene in Little Shop of Horrors when she said has that Someplace That's Green song where she sings about the kids watching Howdy Doody.
I don't know why I just wasted a spot on Back to the Future Part 3, but I will.
I don't know why you did either. That's really weird.
All right. A period piece movie. I should go back. The David Harbour character, Shep, I believe it was him. He says he's a mathematician.
Yes.
Is that correct? Yes.
No, it's Michael Shannon.
It was Michael Shannon the mathematician.
Oh, Michael Shannon.
One of them. PhD. Maybe that explains why he's so, like, in touch with the universe, because he's a mathematician.
Sure.
Anyways, we had a character who's a mathematician. I was thinking about the time period. Also thinking about, you know, our pattern of circling back to actors, Oscar-nominated movies. And so we can circle back to Russell Crowe. It's been almost a month. And watch Beautiful Mind. A Beautiful Mind.
Mm-hmm. It's two Jennifer Connelly movies on the list now.
Oh, there we go. We got a lot of gaslighting in this. So why not gaslight?
I thought of that. I had that as my also-rans as well.
Mm-hmm.
Gaslight. That's 4. I really shouldn't have wasted this, but I'm Back to the Future Part 3. All right. And for my 5th.
Take it off.
That's okay. Another movie that's a third movie. And if we will do this, I will implore people to take the time to watch the first two before we watch the third one. And it is about marriage and just the monotony of marriage getting to you, about a couple with kids. This time it's Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, and that is Before Midnight.
Yeah, that was on my list as it also ran, for sure.
I kind of hate skipping all the way to the third one because the trilogy is so great.
Yeah.
But people can watch all three, and then we'll only talk about
it's so good Before Midnight.
It's also Before Midnight is like the one of the three that I like the least. I still really like it, but I love
it. It's the one I liked the most. So
yeah.
There you go.
I think it's I think it's like intentionally, you know, a little bit more of a downer
for sure.
than the other two.
Yeah.
So. And I have some decent ones on my list, but that's okay. All right.
Yeah.
Go ahead and read what we got, Brendan.
All right. Heavenly Creatures. The one I love, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Marty, Marriage Story, American Beauty, Empire of Light, Heavenly Creatures Again, Road to Perdition, The Holiday, The Road, Glory Road, Misery, Little Children, All That Heaven Allows, Carol, Gone Girl, The Ice Storm, Far From Heaven, The Nest, Sunset Boulevard, You Hurt My Feelings, All of the Strangers, Pleasantville, Back to the Future 3, A Beautiful Mind, Gaslight, and Before Midnight. Zach, you get to go first.
Oh, crap. I wasn't ready. all right.
Fine. I was looking up. I get to go first. No, it's
okay. I'll go first. I was just looking up All of the Strangers to see if it would be worth suggest, like if it has enough connections to suggest or not. But I will do my listener pick first. And I think I gotta put. I'm looking at all of Alex O's. Heavenly Creatures was suggested a bunch. I'm gonna do Eternal Sunshine because great movie. I think it is like Kate Winslet in another toxic relationship and how it is impacting things.
Yep.
And she was nominated for Best Actress for that, and I think it won Best Original Screenplay.
Oh, good. Okay.
There you go.
Should have been nominated for Best Picture, in my opinion.
I do feel like that's one of those movies that, like, if they did the, like, we're doing the Oscars 10 years later type thing instead of doing the year of, I think it's one that would, it would definitely.
Go ahead.
If she had won that year and Leo had won for The Aviator, that would have been nice.
Yeah. It's a movie I'm not as high on, so it'll be interesting to revisit. I haven't revisited since I saw it in college, and I was not very high on it. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Now you get to go.
I'll also go with my Lewis Leonard pick. I'm between two because they were both sort of on my list, skirting the outside of my list. The very first movie I wrote down on my list was Marriage Story, the Noah Baumbach film starring Adam Driver. I gotta put Marriage Story on there.
Nice.
Also Oscar nominated. So
hey, nobody put The Reader on their list.
Nope.
Good for you.
Marriage Story. That was your. That's yours, Brendan. Marriage Story.
Yes, Marriage Story. Marriage.
Now Megan gets to go.
I think I'm gonna go with Misery. I don't know. I just like that.
There you go. Nice.
Misery.
We were talking earlier about how cold it has been lately. It's
freaking cold. Yeah. It's
true. I don't think I've ever seen Misery either. It's like one of those where I'm like, maybe I've seen it, but it really does not ring a bell.
And Kathy Bates did win Best Actress, I believe.
Very true.
Oh, good. Yeah. I forgot to look up. Did Marriage Story have some Oscar? Marriage Story.
Oh, yeah. Laura Dern won.
Okay.
Ray Liotta.
Yes, I always forget he was in that.
Excuse me. Yeah, Kathy Bates won Best Actress. Good job. Okay, cool. All right. Back to me now to pick from our list. I think I'm going to go with Far From Heaven because I just kept thinking about Far From Heaven. It's been on my watch list to revisit. I think it's like a very similar.
Haven't seen it.
It's similar to this in like setting and that like, you know, the suburbia is not all it's cracked up to be type thing.
Is there anybody we'd be circling back to in that? I know it stars Julianne Moore, right?
Julianne Moore and Dennis Quaid.
Dennis Haysbert. And nice.
I think we might break that cycle. That would be terrible.
That would be terrible.
You know, you just need to start watching a bunch of Julianne Moore movies.
We'd just start a new one. We'd have to circle back to people from this. We haven't had James Rebhorn in anything, have we?
No.
Not this year.
Not this year.
I do love James Rebhorn so much.
I do too. He's a good that guy as well. I will go with crap. See, this is really hard.
And it was also nominated for
Julianne Moore was nominated. You got a lot of best actress nominees in here.
Yeah, Todd Haynes, best cinematography and best music. So we're doing a good job.
I'll pick Gone Girl. I can see the connections. I can see the suburbia. I could see the based on a book. I could see the like seemingly perfect couple that tears itself apart. Gone Girl. Yeah.
Okay. Seriously, just watched it. I mean, not just watched it, but the end of last year. But yeah, it's fine.
I'm always happy to watch Gone Girl again. I love that.
Yep.
I think I'm gonna take Gaslight. Because I think that's a good that some older like movies.
I think Gaslight
is really creepy. Yeah. Like
it's really creepy.
Yeah, and Ingrid Bergman is great in that movie. Good. Yeah, so I do like that one.
I think it's our only Best Picture nominee that's been suggested.
Interesting.
No, Marriage Story was
not. Yeah, Marriage Story was Best Picture nominee. Okay. Right? Yeah,
that was the only one I didn't Google because you guys were so certain on.
Got it.
Gone Girl should have been.
Should have been, yeah. All right, so our final six is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Marriage Story, not a Marriage Story, not the Marriage Story, just Marriage Story.
No,
Misery, no problem. Far From Heaven, Gone Girl, and Gaslight. I like all of these picks. I like all of these movies.
This is a strong way to end out Oscar month that we just kind of stumbled into.
The only thing that's a blind spot for me is Far From Heaven. It's one that's been on my watch list for a long time.
Let's start with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Where do you think that is streaming, Brendan?
Netflix.
It's a service that you use often.
Paramount Plus.
Criterion Channel.
Oh, Criterion. Nice.
Okay. Yep.
Oh, that's right. They've been promoting it a lot, actually.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I think this is part of their sci-fi thing that they're doing right now.
Something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Marriage Story, obviously, is on Netflix.
It's a Netflix film.
It also looks like you can get it on Amazon. Only on Amazon Disc.
Well,
I think there's a Criterion release of that, which is
the best. I believe there is. Yeah, Marriage Story was one of those ones that was instantly put on Criterion.
Misery looks a little difficult. It looks like it's
Amazon rental, probably.
No, not even that. It's Showtime on Apple TV or Spectrum on demand.
Oh, okay.
So not even on Amazon. Thanks. So I feel like we can toss that.
We're tossing Misery then. Misery loves not to have company.
Yeah. We would have been circling back to Rob Reiner, though, if we would have done Misery. Gone Girl, not streaming, rentable, but not streaming on
Amazon. Wow, that's wild. Yeah.
A 5-star Megan Librarian pick.
Yeah.
Love Far Gone From Heaven. on Stars through Apple TV, also on Watch TCM.
Okay, so that's a little harder to find as well. Yeah,
or rentable as well.
Yeah.
And Gaslight. Oh, geez.
It's not a Criterion anymore.
Gaslight also on Watch TCM, IndieFlix, I don't know what that is, or rentable.
I swear I saw Gaslight on Criterion, but maybe it got removed. I don't know.
It's gotten changed. So, yeah. I mean, at least you can rent it. Or get it from your library.
Is Watch TCM, do you have to pay for that?
It says subs under it. I'm assuming.
Okay. Because we don't have it in Canada, and TCM is one of the only reasons I still have cable. And if I could get their app, they don't have it for Canada.
Oh, Watch TCM, you sign in with your cable provider.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
So, which I don't know if YouTube TV counts as that. It should. Oh, yeah, it does count. Oh, cool. I will use Watch TCM.
TCM is great. I love TCM so much.
Right. I wonder if it has ads. Do you think Watch TCM has ads, or do you think
I can't imagine. Yeah. TCM doesn't have ads.
Yeah.
Like, this channel doesn't have ads, except between the movies. They show little mini documentaries and old trailers and stuff.
Oh, all right. Yep. Cool. So, all right. So it's doable. Well, we hit our Oscar thing. Yeah, we threw out Misery. So we have Eternal Sunshine, Marriage Story, Gone Girl, Far From Heaven, and Gaslight to pick from. Any strong leans?
I don't like Marriage Story that much.
Okay. It's one I'd like to revisit, but I think that it is also a little on the nose talking about the same. We would be talking about a lot of the same kind of stuff.
I do think it's similar. It's true. Want to point out that Adam Driver's character is he plays a stage director, which I didn't.
This is very true. And she's an actress. Yep.
Exactly.
She's
so I wonder how much Marriage Story is actually calling back to Revolutionary Road. Pretty similar in some ways. But yeah, that's fine. I'm fine throwing it out. I wouldn't mind watching Marriage Story at some point, though. Because I haven't seen it since 2019, and I remember really liking it. I'm not going to throw out Gone Girl, but I'm going to put Gone Girl on the side just because I just...
In a box.
Yeah, just because I just watched it.
Throw it out then. It's fine.
If we come back and we say we really want to do it, that's fine. I'll watch it again, but I do...
I think that Eternal Sunshine makes a lot of sense because it's a movie I'm low on. Mm-hmm. And it's a great... I mean, it's obviously a... Great Kate Winslet performance. She got nominated for it, but it's a movie that I haven't revisited since college because I've always been sort of down on it. Mm-hmm. So let's find out if I'm wrong. Dramatic Jim Carrey. Let's see.
I was going to say that we were coming back to Ruffalo, but we haven't watched anything with Ruffalo this year.
No, we haven't. I think it makes a lot of sense to go with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, especially with the way that this movie fantasizes relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Eternal Sunshine does. I mean,
well, and Eternal Sunshine is a movie about memory.
Yeah.
And, looking back on the past is what Revolutionary Road is all about. And a certain person on this podcast gave Eternal Sunshine 5 stars.
Well,
yep.
All right. Yeah. Let's do Eternal Sunshine on the Spotless Mind. Then it'll be really interesting for me to revisit that movie, 20 years after I saw it without ever revisiting it.
So. And if you are on the fence about watching Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, a young woman named Megan the Librarian in 2019, in October of 2019, said...
I wasn't that young then.
A masterpiece, no question, period. And that was her whole movie. And then she
I do think it's a great movie.
You did watch it again in 2021 as well.
All right. Yeah,
I really love that one.
Let's Eternally Sunshine.
All right, cool. Eternal Sunshine of Spotless Mind. I'm excited to do this. I already have very interesting ways I would want to go from this.
Cool. That's a good trailer.
Roland Emmerich's brother. Oh, good. Glad it's a good trailer because that's important these days.
Oh, I meant to say when I suggested Little Children, Noah Emmerich is in that.
Yeah, nice. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
He's also in in a movie that most likely, almost for sure, will come up next week.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And
I don't know
the Letterboxd point, speaking of Little Children, the Letterboxd point this week would have been Little Children.
Yeah. Yes.
It's
because that is the movie, as Megan said, that Todd Field went on and directed because he didn't direct this. Mm-hmm.
When I watched Revolutionary Road and that Little Children was the first one I wrote down. And then I was on Letterboxd today and I was like,
Yes,
Little Children and the Ice Storm, both in on there. The Hours.
And Far From Heaven is there,
Far
too.
Far From Heaven, yep. And a movie that didn't come up, Blue Valentine, which is, that is, that would have been a good connection.
That's that actually is a good connection, yeah.
So, anybody else have any honorable mentions that didn't come up?
I mean, I joked about Don't Worry, Darling, but I did write it down.
Yep, had that, too.
Petrified Forest.
Which one?
The Petrified Forest. That's the play they do at the beginning. It's a Betty Davis movie with Leslie Howard. I also had, there's a movie, speaking of Mark Ruffalo, there's a movie called Reservation Road that came out in 2007.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Also based on a book, also a sad family story.
Yep.
Is Jennifer Connelly in that too? I don't know. And Joaquin Phoenix, but
it's not streaming yet, but I did also write down Anatomy of a Fall.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Yep. I Take Shelter from Michael Shannon.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Fury Road, because Mad Max is coming out this year, and the road in the title. And then The Girl on the Train as well, because of all the train commuting and like seeing things. I don't remember a ton about that though, but I don't know. It has bad. It has very bad rating on Letterboxd. So
I saw that movie. It was like,
it was fine. Yeah, whatever. It wasn't good.
It's no Gone Girl, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's no Gone Girl. It's trying to be Gone Girl, and it's not Gone Girl.
It's trying. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's Gillian Flynn wrote both, I think, right?
No.
I've
read all. Gillian Flynn has only written three books, which I find sad because I think they're all really good. Like, but she's like, they're so dark. Mm-hmm. All her books are incredibly dark.
She did Sharp Objects,
right? Sharp Objects and Dark Places is the other one. But I really liked all of them. I liked The Book of Gone Girl a lot.
The Book of Gone Girl. It sounds like an episode of The Leftovers.
Let the mystery be.
Yeah. I also had Killers of the Flower Moon on my list.
That's more spousal abuse.
Yeah, exactly. Leo,
You know what, Leo? Maybe stop making these domestic abuse movies. Yeah. I don't know.
We probably would have gotten good numbers if we did that the week of the Oscars. Maybe we do that in 2 weeks. Although I don't know how we get back to it.
Leo's domestic abuse all just a result of him getting abused by Robert De Niro in Blacklight?
Probably.
Yeah. See, generational trauma.
I thought you were talking about Leo Domestic Abuse Month. I thought that was where you were going with that. No, I was like,
you've already done Inception and Shutter Island.
Yeah,
so.
I know, right?
Oh, speaking of Tobey Maguire, we have Elijah Wood in Eternal Sunshine. I feel like they're the same. Like, they always get them confused.
They're both in the Ice Storm. So.
Are they?
Yeah, they are both in the Ice Storm.
Ah, mm-hmm. Nice. Okay.
They don't play brothers.
No.
Cool.
The scene with Elijah Wood where he's talking about molecules. I always think about that. It's so weird.
Elijah Wood also in Back to the Future Part 1.
Marty.
Yep. All right. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Just closing out that Valentine's Love Month as well as Oscar Month with Eternal Sunshine. Is this three? How many? No, I guess it's just two. It'll just be two relationship dramas in a row. All right.
Happy Leap Day, everybody.
Oh, yeah. Happy Leap Day. Yes.
I hope everybody enjoyed this Leap Day podcast, which will instantly be forgotten next year.
Yeah, you only get it once every 4 years.
Yeah,
You only get to listen
to this. We promise to only do this once every 4 years.
Do you think we did a podcast on Leap Day 2020, right before COVID started?
No.
Let's see. What do you think we did that week? If you give me a second, I can go back to that.
I don't think we did because we hadn't started yet, right?
No, we started. We started in January 2020.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Good so time. Let's see. Yeah. February of
2020. Would have been very early on. Don't make me guess.
Yeah, no. I realize I'm not going to be able to say it, but I did want to see if we
Sorcerer?
Did.
Was it Sorcerer? It might have been Sorcerer.
No, I think that was too early. No, it looks like Leap Day of 2020 fell on a weekend, so we wouldn't have recorded.
Gotcha.
But we did do... No, I don't know. I don't have the movie. I don't have the movie written.
Oh, because they're not in order. Yeah.
No, I was looking at my calendar, not.
Yeah,
it doesn't help.
Right.
All right.
Anyway.
Anyways, maybe I can find it somehow. But
what's everybody looking forward to watching this other?
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, because I didn't watch any movies this week, I have still the same things that I was planning to watch last week, but
not the Survivor premiere.
No, but after we talked about how great Margot Robbie is last week, I put the Birds of Prey DVD on hold at the library, and it came in.
Nice.
So I might watch that this weekend. Yeah, I think I will.
Yeah,
I hope. Ewan McGregor's in that, too. I like him. So, and I'm way behind on my challenges now, but okay.
It always sucks when that happens.
Yeah.
But you know, I booked myself a 4-day weekend next weekend.
There you go. Catch up.
Yeah, I have my tickets for Dune 2 this weekend.
Oh my god, I need to watch
Dune
again.
Really excited to go for Dune. Yeah, I'll probably watch the first Dune again Saturday night just to refresh my memory. Also, Shogun on FX. I want to start watching. So
I heard that's good.
I saw a trailer for Dune 2 and was like, you know what? I don't remember a single thing about Dune 1. So now I have to watch it again.
It's probably I remember I liked it. Dune. It's a direct
I rewatched Dune 1. That was almost going to be the best thing I watched this week, but I ended up going to Schindler's List. Dune 1, very good, very much half a movie. I do agree with that criticism. The fact that they made it without Dune 2 greenlit, I'm sure they knew they were going to do Dune 2, but that could have been all we got, and it really is just like set up. In my first review of that of Dune 1, I said this reminds me of the first season of a TV show, and it really does fit the first season of a TV show. But it's awesome. It's great, and it made me super excited to be oh good, I can go see the next one in less than a week. So most looking forward to thing also is Dune 2. I am going Friday, so I will see it before Brendan, and then I'm gonna not text him spoilers.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
And I did do a little research. On February 24th, 2020, we did Hot Fuzz, and then the week after we did Point Break. So
Love Point
we did Break. Not do a Leap Day podcast, but we were between Hot Fuzz and Point Break.
Get me two.
Yeah. Get me Dune 2.
Yep, get me Dune 2.
Yeah. All right, cool.
Dakota, get me Dune 2.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is coming up next week. Yeah. It is on Criterion Channel, which and if you don't have it, they do offer a free trial. It's an awesome service. It's definitely the best service. You can subscribe for a whole year for $40 or something cheap. It's not expensive.
It's
for
$100
or maybe $100. It might be $100. But still, that's not bad. If you have cable, it looks like you can sign it to Watch TCM and you can watch it on Watch TCM, or you can watch it on Stars on Apple TV, or you can just rent it or get it from your local library. Put a hold on right now before anybody else gets it. So we'll see everybody next week for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
St. Louis.
Shout out Tim's review. I don't know if I should read this about Revolutionary Road. I can't believe you
posted. Oh, no.
Just a couple weeks ago, January 16, 2023, he just watched this movie.
Oh, no.
He said, Psalm 41, and he quotes, "The doctor said my mom should have had an abortion." Tim.
Shut up, Tim. Never one to pull his punches, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I love Tim.
We got to show Tim on the podcast. It's a good reminder. We got to have him back on the podcast sometime.
Oh, my God.
Oliver says, who needs couples therapy when you can invite Michael Shannon over for dinner?
Men would rather let their wives get an abortion than go to therapy. That's what this movie is.
Probably true.
Alicia,
we were talking about height. Height came up a lot on this podcast. Yeah. Alicia says, "I refuse to believe that Leonardo DiCaprio is 6 feet tall. The man just radiates short energy." Is he 6 feet tall?
You know, well, he is. And, that reminds me, because my mom was convinced that Leo was really, really short. And she wouldn't. I was like, no, I don't think he is. I think he's maybe, 5'11 or 6 feet. She was like, no. And then that was when they released the first promo picture for Don't Look Up, where he's walking behind Meryl Streep and he's towering over everybody else in the scene. And she's like, no, I still don't believe it. She just refused.
It's one of those things where Tom Cruise insists on standing on a box.
I didn't realize he was so tall.
He's not a giant, but he's
not Michael Shannon.
Yeah,
he's taller than me too.
Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, I'll close things out with Trav, and I can't believe it took me all the way to the bottom of the popular reviews on Letterboxd. Oh no, never mind. There actually are reviews that have the same point. But Trav says maybe Jack from Titanic was better off dead.
We got to cut out this entire post-credit scene.
No, it's okay. You can't get canceled for post-credit scene.
Is that true?
I don't know.
Just ask the DCEU.
Yeah, they don't pay off anymore. All right, do you want me to do another one? I'll do this. This one has emojis. Movie starts. Leo, mad face emoji. Kate, crying face emoji. The end.
Oh, God.
What about Kate's mad face, though?
True. I guess Abigail doesn't think Kate gets mad.
I feel like it should swap. It should start out with Leo mad, Kate sad, and it ends with Kate mad, Leo sad.
True. Yeah. There's kind of a point in the
symmetry.
Yeah. Symmetry. Thank you. That was what I was looking for. All right. Go watch Mad Men, everybody. If yes. you like this movie, go watch Mad Men. I think you have to get the AMC app, though.
Or the DVDs.
Or the library DVDs, of course. All right.
It's worth owning so you can watch it over and over.
See everybody next week. Eternal Sunshine, Spice. Spotless Mind.
Spice must flow.
We're not doing Dune.